suddenly, and just to pass on sympathies to her family, including her brother Kieran, who was, of course, an MEP and a former member of this council. Siobhan was a lovely woman, worked really hard for the area, and is somebody who I hope will be remembered. And later on in today, in the manager's report, there is confirmation of one of the things she had been looking for, which was the installation of additional seats in Baggot Street, and there will be 11 installed in the programme, as you can see. And I would ask the manager just to have a look at perhaps putting an appropriate, and I'm not going to word this here in committee, but an appropriate plaque on one of those 11 seats, just to remember Siobhan, if that's okay with everybody. Okay,
Manager. Well said, Dermot.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. That's very appropriate, and indeed my condolences. I would wonder if that idea in relation to the seat and the plaque would be referred to the Protocol Committee, where I'll be certainly, not the Protocol Committee, but the Commemorations Committee, where I'll be certainly supporting it. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Manny. It would be one of those little small plaques. It wouldn't require a Protocol Committee. It's not one of the...
It would just be wise, I think, to put it through it.
Parks can approve them under the current protocol. If it's agreeable, that's the current protocol. That's okay with everybody. Sorry, Paddy McCartan.
Chair, I'd just like to associate myself with your comments. Siobhan was a very active for her community over the years in all the different aspects, whether relative to Bus Connects or Baggot Street Hospital or enhancing her area, and I was shocked and I would pass on my condolences to her husband, Pat Wallace, and her extended family. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks very much, everybody, and sincere sympathy. May she rest in peace. Okay. We're going to move on to item one, the draft digital strategy. I don't know if Eileen is going to present that or who's going to present that. Derek is going to present it. Okay. And Pauline. So while they're setting up, can we agree the minutes of the meeting on the 11th of March. Agreed? Okay, and just one thing, Manager, just question number 12 was to be sent back and to be looked at again. It was just for a request for a yield sign outside Donnybrook Church. It doesn't cause any problem, the presence of us, and it may help people if we can do it. Okay, are you ready?
Yep.
Okay, we'll start. Item number one.
Míle buíochas don Seans Bheirbhar Láthair, Lord Mayor, sorry, Chair,
okay.
and councillors, thank you very much for the opportunity to be here to present our draft digital strategy. It's an opportunity for you, I suppose, to feed back to us in terms of what your areas of priorities that you would like us to maybe focus on. I want to give a commitment, and Pauline will be going into this in greater detail, that we're not going to leave anyone behind in terms of our digital strategy. And I'll let Pauline outline the strategy in greater depth, but I suppose before we go to consultation, we just want to get your feedback. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Derek, and thank you for giving us the opportunity to come and talk to you today. So I suppose, firstly, I suppose I wanted to talk about the context of the strategy. Our aim as Service and Digital Transformation is to, I suppose, improve services to all our citizens, no matter what channel they choose to deal with us on. I suppose traditionally we've had a lack of services available online for citizens, so I suppose what we're trying to focus on is improving our offering in that regard, whilst at the same time still delivering a good service over phone and people coming into us and more traditional routes. We're very much, I suppose, about putting the customer at the centre of the page in terms of how we're trying to design the service. It's about working smarter, I suppose, for the organisation, doing things more efficiently, getting better data on the services we're delivering. And I suppose that's the key thing, is measuring our performance for service improvement. So I suppose, just to give you an outline, I suppose some of the major platforms we've been working with over the last year or two, and Citizen Hub, I suppose, is our key platform for delivering online services for citizens. And we have over 50 services live on it now. I just want to give you an example of choice-based lettings, which was actually a very successful service we delivered on it. They've had a number of properties offered since we went live in October. We'd over 23,000 submissions. It took the person about 4 minutes to fill the form in to apply for choice-based lettings, and 87% of the submissions were made online by people. Which shows, I suppose, that if you build it, they will come. Now, not everybody obviously will choose to deal with this online, but from a citizen perspective, it can be quicker. I suppose particularly for transactional things like applying for services or reporting something. And again, we got very good feedback. And again, this is something that we're trying to do, is monitor the feedback we're getting from people on how, so that we can constantly improve what we're doing. And again, that's just some of the reaction from people. And it was a very positive response. Again, this is an example of some of the dashboards we're building with the Citizen Hub platform. So we can, again, get better information in terms of how the services are being delivered and how people are experiencing those services. So that's just an example of the waste management dashboard for Citizen Hub. And again, that will help our colleagues in waste management look at where the black spots are and look at how we can improve, I suppose. The other two big platforms, I suppose, are the DCC Alert service, which people can sign up for, and you can be alerted on lots of different things, like water outages, traffic, road closures, those sort of things. And again, that's proven quite popular, and more people are signing up for it. And again, it's a proactive service, I suppose, we're delivering. And the other thing is book and space. So it's live in the arts office now, where people can just, if you want to book a room or rent out particular spaces, you can do that. Again, you can do that online. So the other key thing we're trying to do is improve our communication with the outdoor staff and give our outdoor staff access to tech. And the key point of that, I suppose, is as well as actually being able to update people, but it is that when they, say, do a job, they can actually close it. So we're getting more efficient delivery service, I suppose. So when the legal dumping is picked up, the person who's doing it just closes the call, so it doesn't have to go back to the office and all of that stuff. So again, it's about streamlining and improving how we're delivering services and getting better information, because when it's closed, when the job is actually done, you have more accurate information as to how long it took us to do something. You don't have that delay where it's going back to the office and then eventually it's getting updated, or maybe not updated. But our aim, I suppose, is to constantly improve services. So as I said, I suppose in terms of the strategy, our vision is about improving, or trying to improve, how we deliver our services to citizens and improve the quality of life in Dublin City. Again, I suppose a key element for this is that we're focused on the citizen. We're trying to design services and allow people access services in how it's the easiest way for them to do it, I suppose, is what we want. We also want to get better data so that we can improve our decision making and service delivery. And the whole concept of just making gradual improvements, that it mightn't be all right the first time that it goes in, but that we're constantly trying to make it better depending on feedback from people and from staff. And that whole thing about agile iterative improvement is really important way, I suppose, in terms of how we work. So it won't be perfect, or it mightn't be perfect first time, but it we can get better at it. The four key goals are to digitally enable the city and our community. Now that's around looking at some of the smart city initiatives using 5G, but also how we're actually engaging people in the community with services, like delivering, say, classes for people, having screens available so people can actually go in and look at things in the offices. That we can see some of them already in the civics. We're hoping that will move out to the areas. The second pillar is around our digitally sort of citizen-centred services and improving our range of services accessible online. Third is around the data-driven decision-making. And as I said, unless you've actually digitised a service, you can't actually get data on it. It's really hard to get data on paper-based services. So that will improve the data we're getting and how we can make better decisions with that data. And the fourth pillar is around our own staff. And I suppose improving the tools and tech that our staff have access to, but also making sure that people are trained so they can actually use technology better. So in terms of our first pillar, there's a couple of different things, I suppose. As I said, the smart city initiatives in terms of trying to focus on the climate action, mobility, smart economy, making better use of the smart Dublin regional partnerships, investing in citizen engagement platforms. Now, we have a new consultation tool coming out, and again, improving how we consult with citizens and what options there are there for people engaging with us on progress of particular schemes. And then the fourth element is around the telecoms infrastructure and how we can use the assets we have around the city better to improve connectivity, I suppose, particularly in relation to 5G. In terms of the citizen-centred services, as I said, we want to build a new suite of services. We have a couple of platforms. We're constantly trying to build and improve services on them. We also want to get research and feedback from citizens. So we've set up a couple of different citizen forums so that we can actually get feedback on before we actually put services live, that we can actually engage with citizens better in terms of the design of those services. Again, we want to experiment with new tech, and I suppose the other thing is to promote the digital enhancement and the skills in the community. And again, that's with areas with different forums, I suppose, in terms of community that we have across the city. Data-driven decision-making, it's a huge thing for us. We need to improve how we're using data. But to do that, we actually need to get the data. So we need to be digitising services so that we actually have data that we can report on and can use that for service improvement. Our people is obviously a key, I suppose, a key element of the strategy, that we're actually training people up. We're upskilling. Technology is changing so quick. There's so many different things coming in. It's important for us as an organisation that people are aware of trends, but also that we can use it to improve how we're delivering services. And we want to do the same, I suppose, as we're trying to streamline and digitise customer-facing services. We want to do the same with our own internal services and not have bits of paper floating around the organisation all the time when people are applying for things. And again, I suppose trying to improve the staff training in terms of looking at how we design for users, and that we're not looking at ourselves all the time, that we're outward looking in terms of how people want to access services. And then, sorry, the last one then is the progress, how we measure our progress. So what we want to end up with is a suite of, I suppose, projects for the next couple of years. We're going to go out to public consultation. What we want to hear is what services people want online, how they'd like to access services, what services councillors would like to see online. And so when we actually have a programme of work, then we can measure it, I suppose, in the context of that work. For the National Digital Strategy, there is a target of 90% of all public services accessible online by 2030. Like, that's the national, as part of the National Digital Strategy. Now, obviously, not all services are, you're not going to want to access all services online, but I suppose 90% is a high target, and we need to be sort of compliant with that in terms of nationally what's trying to be achieved. And yeah, as I said, I suppose it's like how much better we get with data by the end of this, and how we've proven, I suppose, that our services have been improved by the data that we've collected. So I think that's it, really. Thank you.
Thanks, Pauline. Derek, do you want to add anything?
No.
Okay, Paddy McCarthy, Pat Dunn, and Beanie Manningsley in that order. Paddy.
Thanks very much for the presentation. This is sort of mind-boggling stuff for somebody of my vintage. And I just have a few questions about, you say about the choice-based lettings there, where there was an 87% response. Now, obviously, was that broken down into age groups? Because we're all aware of the inability of certain sections of our community to deal with some of these more advanced technologies. And I think it's something that, I have some problem doing. I've learned a lot over the last few years, but I know that certain people there are just not engaged. Now, you set out a target then for 2030, a 90% public services online. Is this in relation to Dublin City Council, or is this generally? Because we've a lot of ambitious targets by 2030, whether it's house building or whether it's issues related to climate. So I'm just wondering how realistic they are. In terms of, is there any role in this for AI, artificial intelligence, given that it's a topic on a lot of people's agenda at the moment? And also, we're aware then of the dangers of technology in terms of hacking and our people being constantly on their guard by giving information and putting it out online, that we've seen it, how sophisticated some of these hackers have become over the years, so that you'd need to build a very smart technology to counter all that. But, you know, it's obviously the future, and the less paperwork we can do, the better. But I would advise that it would be a gradual process, given that we're going to have an ageing population, and to try and get them to engage. But a very interesting presentation. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much for the presentation. I'm glad to say it was a good digital presentation in terms of the slideshow and the whole lot, very easy to follow. And I think it's very good progress that we've made in terms of making our services available through the various portals and so forth. But it is, and Councillor McCartan referred to it, it is leaving some people behind. And it's not just people of a certain age group. One of the difficulties I come across mostly, and it was referred to choice-based letting, is that a lot of people would have nothing more than a telephone and not always a smartphone. And when they're able to do limited things and see limited things on a very small screen and so forth, it's not easy to use. And we must acknowledge that, and we must try and reach out to those people who are using kind of limited technology, that they would be able to have the same benefits as others do. And that goes on to other things, like we have application forms for housing, for maintenance, for loads of other things available online to download and print. Very few people have a printer at home, you know? And we need to acknowledge that, and we need to see how best we can reach out to them. And again, if somebody was to complete an application form with all the boxes ticked and the signature on it, a scanning device is required to be able to send it back into you. And again, we have a lot of people who wouldn't have access to scanners and so forth. So while we're making very good progress internally, I think we need to reach out to those who just at this moment in time haven't got proper access to those types of facilities. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks very much, Chair. I don't know what the buzz is there, but thanks very much for the presentation. It's very Thanks very much for the presentation. It's very ambitious, and it's great to see a lot of progress being made in relation to it. And I suppose above all that it's citizen-centred. You know, that's and that it'll address the issue of real-time measuring, which gives an opportunity in terms of improving processes, etc. So I think all of that is fantastic. Just a couple of things. One, there's no mention of the councillor hub, councillor digital hub. This was talked about, and we were given presentations on it a couple of years ago, with a view to having a digital portal, if you like, for councillors, which would allow us to track our queries, see progress, etc., etc. And I just don't see this anywhere in that. And given that the role of a councillor is to advocate on behalf of citizens, I think this should have been an integral part of the whole development. Then just also link, I'm just wondering, are there any links on the various systems to citizens advice or on board Planola or government gov.ie services? just to make it seamless for people, citizens, to get information through this portal. And finally, just in relation to Councillor Dunn mentioned about age, and not just age-related, but just accessibility to information for people who don't find a digital platform easy, is there an opportunity to use our libraries and other institutions for to help people access services more easily? Thank you.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you very much for the presentation. Much appreciated. Look, you know, I certainly will be supporting these initiatives, but I think you have to bear in mind that tech changes very, very fast, and by the time you get to 2030, this will be dead in the water. I don't know what the general thing about 2030 is, because Richard Shakespeare was on the radio the other day talking about 2030. Maybe it's some sort of special day or a special year. I'm not quite sure, or there's a legislative sign-off on that. But one has got to be very careful, I think, about these dates, because governments are constantly saying they're going to be doing this, and local authorities are the same thing. This is an ongoing issue at the present. I think it's also important that you actually speak about this particular technology with the suite of other things that are available. There is nothing like human contact. Many people want human contact. This isn't like, you know, Coca-Cola. This is Dublin City Council, the local authority. It has huge responsibility to its staff. It has huge responsibility to its councillors, and it has massive responsibility to the general public. And if I go across all those platforms, which I do, there's a very disconnected situation. You made an example there, which is basically in relation to bedsits and choice-based lettings. Bearing in mind the amount of people that are looking for accommodation, it's not surprising that people would go online with that particular situation. But as I say, there are issues there in terms of communicating. Even in general things, in terms of communicating this piece of communication to the public, there's difficulties. Dublin City Council has a huge difficulty communicating itself in an appropriate way. You know, I mean, I can't really go anywhere where I see the City Council really positively promoting itself. You know, it's civic banners, all of those kind of things. But nonetheless, you know, I think that you're making progress here. It's certainly part of the legislative process. And I do think that there are vulnerable people out there who need to be, like, you know, looked at, you know, in many, many ways. But as I said, the main thing for me is, and again, I'd like to see the staff connected, including the Fir Brigade staff and all those staff connected, so as they are connected. Again, I think you also have to connect your tenancies. So, for instance, everybody in a block of flats, everybody who is availing of tenancies needs to be connected into that situation. They need that, much more so, to be able to register their complaints. And I think, as I say, we will have a great success. But it is, I think, in the, you know, along with a tranche of documents or a tranche of approaches, it's another approach. And I think when you're selling it, I think you have to mention those other things, that you can come in and get a hug off the council. Thanks.
Thanks, Mannix. And the 2030 date significance is that it's the end of the seven-year term of the chief executive. That's why 2030 was used. Fiona Connolly.
I'd like to echo the praise for this presentation and the digital strategy. It's very ambitious, and I would like to echo the concerns that other councillors have raised, the access of the services for elderly people or people who are choosing to have a dumb phone and for other reasons don't want to be engaged in a digital world all the time. So that's a similar concern. I also have an issue, or I would like to raise the issue of, you mentioned work rate, so people would take a photo, the digital remote working, because I would hate for work rates to be prioritised over some of the soft conversations that happen in the parks, like park rangers having that sideways soft conversations, and if they're under pressure to up their work rate at the expense of the other things that happen, incidental work, that's really important, it's really measurable, it's really important. So that will be something I'd like to see kept in the programme. And finally, I would like to echo the concerns just around data management and data, keeping data. So thank you very much for the presentation.
Thanks, Fiona. Hazel Chu? Hazel?
Sorry, yeah. Chair. Yeah. Sorry. My laptop's a bit gone there. I was actually on the hub while I was listening to all the concerns as well. Firstly, I have to say it's a huge amount of work. So to all the councillors' point, praise has to and credit has to go to the team. So thank you so much for doing this. I know there's a lot of back-end work. From my side, I know that... Hello, can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you, Hazel.
Oh, yeah, sorry. From my side, it's just following up to Pat's point about choice-based lettings. And I know Pat had said it at housing before. is there a possibility to make sure, since we are, it makes the system more efficient for people to be able to apply online through choice-based lettings, and I know your data has shown how efficient and how it's encouraging people, but to have an added service of it, and it may have been added since Housing SBC, is to provide people with a reply. Like, if it's easy enough for people to apply, it should be easy enough to give them even an automated reply of whether they got if they didn't get it, that it's a mass reply to those who didn't get it, because it's really tough for people waiting and checking and then having to go through allocations to find out whether they did and didn't get it. So if someone didn't get allocation, it would be great if they can get an email to show up, because I've applied for people online and you get a confirmation at the end, which you can screenshot. It doesn't go into your email of you've applied for this, but you then never hear back unless you have successfully got the allocation. And I think that's very hard for people. So since we're trying to transform this, that would be great. The other thing is in relation to timeframes. Like, there's lighting, I've logged on lightings and other things. Can it be that there's a way to provide people with just even around about time frame of this, your order, shall we call it, is in, or your issue is in, and it will be like 5 days or 2 weeks before we come back, or as in approximate time frame to let people know? That would be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Hazel. Tara Deasy.
Thanks, Chair. I don't want to repeat what has already been said. And firstly, I just want to say, well done. It's a massive piece, and it's really beneficial. There's nothing really that I can say in a negative way around the progress of this piece of work. But something in an add-on, I was dealing with a lady this morning whose next door neighbour got a letter in the post to say that serving her notice, and she was a senior citizen herself. And I know Paddy McCartan and Pat Dunne have mentioned it, that human piece. And now we're really good in the Southeast area in terms of the Crumlin office. And I know that this was a conversation we had kind of after COVID as well, that touch and that kind of meeting somebody face to face, going through the forms, doing the photocopying, etc. Because as Pat Dunne said, this scanning stuff, I've only discovered quite recently how to scan on my phone, but the vast majority of people, you know, mightn't be aware that that's something you can do. So I think holding on to that piece, in addition to what you're doing, folks, would be really good, and that we as a collective really hold on to that personal one-to-one face-to-face piece. I think that's really important. And I think Hazel made a really good point there that I'd like to support as well. Some type of a time frame or a rough idea. And I know Councillor Feeney and Feeney and a number of us have raised this around the tag pieces and some of the other, you know, footpaths, etc. Given a rough time frame on stuff is really helpful, and at least people feel that, you know, although it's logged and it's part of the system, but that we have a rough idea. But well done on all of it. I know I can't even imagine the amount of work that goes into doing a piece of work like this. So well done. Thanks.
Thanks, Tara. Carolyn Moore.
Thanks, Chair. Just to thank the officials for the report there, and acknowledge that it's hugely important to modernise how we do things, and to make the work of the Council more accessible is a really good objective there. As other people have said, it's just hugely important that we don't leave people behind as we kind of move elements of the Council's operation forward or modernise them in this way. And there's so many reasons why digital interaction has that risk attached to it. So obviously it's been mentioned there are people who aren't digitally literate who just don't want to do things online. And I suppose the as a customer service focused objective, we should never lose sight of the importance of being able to actually speak to a person face to face or on the phone, and that should never be lost in our efforts to develop a digital strategy for those who find it more convenient and for those who will be able to use it. Just one other point I want to make, it was mentioned there that this would be an ongoing project, and obviously technology develops and user experience approaches develop, and but I suppose just from a personal perspective, the term iterative development was used, and that's a phrase in tech that really almost kind of strikes fear into my heart when I hear it in the context of a customer service thing, because the way that iterative development or design process in tech tends to just change things continuously and move them on and move them on. And to a certain degree, you could say you're improving the process for some people, but I suppose it'd be just very, very conscious again that if we're asking the citizens of Dublin to get used to a whole new way of engaging with the council and doing things, that we would make sure that those iterative developments take place at a pace that actually people can keep up with them, because it can be really, really maddening when you're a regular user of an app or some sort of interface, and literally every time you go in to use it again, you have to relearn how to use it because they're so dependent on this kind of iterative design approach. So there's pros and cons to it, and I would just ask that be kept in mind.
Thanks, Carolyn. Clareburn.
Thank you, and thanks for the presentation and for the strategy. And just to echo what others have said, I know a huge amount of work has gone into this, and it's very important that, you know, just from a public service perspective, that we have a functioning customer service system for the citizens, but it has to be accessible and it has to be inclusive. But I won't go back over all those points that have been raised to that effect. But what I will ask, though, is that, you know, for us as elected representatives who are elected to represent those citizens, like, what is the plan for us? Is it that we're supposed to continue to use the hub as well? Because I don't know other councillors' experience, but I haven't found any quicker response by using the hub necessarily. And I suppose, where are we at with the rep system that councillors have been calling for a number of years, the internal rep system? I mean, something that South Dublin County Council have had in place for at least 20 years. And through that system, you get a dedicated person, you get a timeline of response, you know who to reply to, instead of the sort of multi-system that we have going on at the moment, where you're using the hub and you're using emails and you're calling people and people change. And, you know, so I'm just wondering where councillors fall into this new CRM system. Thank you.
Thanks, Claire. And just for my own part, I'm not a great fan of all these new modern contact systems. I much prefer to talk to people. I haven't found the various hubs to be helpful, to be honest with you. I don't want and won't use a councillor's rep system because I think they disappear into the nether and you never get answers. On a critical level, and it's not to you, but I have found that in the last, since COVID really, that replies to emails have got worse. I'm not going to single out a department, but someday I will. Because they really have replies to simple questions have got worse in recent years. And yes, some staff are absolutely stunningly brilliant. They come back with complicated answers in a very short time, and some people don't come back with easy answers. The only question I have is I've lost my question that other people didn't ask. Yeah, just on the under the waste management, which was the only one I could catch in time, the contacts using the system from the southeast area was, I think, the fourth lowest. And yet I would have thought there would be a very high technology use in the southeast area, and I was just surprised at that. And do you think there's any reason for that at all? And is it reflective in the other areas contacted, or was it just in the waste management section? That's just the only one I could catch. Sorry, I see Deirdre Conroy has put up her hand. Deirdre, if you're going to come in...
I'll be very quick. Thanks, Chairperson, and thanks also to the officials of this report. And I understand everybody has given lots of information about this. But definitely what I can understand, with so many residents in the area who are in contact with us through our email system, there was another massive one at the weekend about the Rathmines post office. So there are certain things that people will just be doing very separately that we have to take on to Dublin City Council. So I'm just letting that know.
Thanks, Deirdre. Okay, Pauline, Dara, whichever wants to respond.
I'll jump in first. Look, I absolutely agree with what you said there in terms of a human touch. I think that's what we can pride ourselves on, the human touch that we do provide. And this is additional to that. So we have to say, look, listen, and we've made a commitment in the strategy, and it's one of our principles that we're not going to leave anyone behind. So someone else mentioned there, we're going to work with other partners, the likes of the libraries, the likes of CDYSB, etc., or the Education Training Board, etc., to work with communities to assist people to upskill their, I suppose, digital level of knowledge. But having said all that, the service will still be, the human level service will still be offered, right? I agree with what everyone was saying in terms of accessibility and inclusiveness, and that's another one of our principles, right? The councillor portal, I'll let Pauline come in to give you the exciting news. It's a pity that you mentioned there that replies have got, I've noted that in terms of got worse in your experience. I see one or two nodding heads around there. So, look, that's a pity, and maybe it's something that myself and Pauline will go away and we'll feedback. Okay? In terms of the links to the other maybe useful websites, like you mentioned there, Citizens Advice, etc. Yeah, I think as far as I know, we have those on the website, but we're going to look at our website in terms of upgrading that as well. With regards AI, yeah, you're right. That presents particular challenges to us all. And there's an internal working group looking at that. So we're going to develop a draft policy, and we'll certainly come here and discuss it with you before we finalise that. In terms of, I agree with what you're saying, right? What we're trying to do is professionalise our approach to the councillors and also to our citizens. So that's where our direction of travel. And it's fitting that we should be able to give you an estimation of time that should take. And the least, very least, we should give you a reply of you've applied for a certain competition or application, and give you a notice of that outcome. So what ideally we want is that on one end, when the citizen reports something, goes right through the system, and it, on the other end, it's dealt with, and there's that it's fed back straight away back to the system, back to the person that made the complaint or service request. So it's kind of like a closed loop. So that's where we want to get to. I know there's a number of different stages before we can get to that, but we're kind of doing that in a sort of, that's our direction of travel. Pauline, I'll hand it over to you. Thank you.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Sorry, in terms of the 87% of the people who used the platform for choice-based lettings, there was no age breakdown. I've no idea of the age range of people. It was purely on applicants, so 87% of people chose to do it online as opposed to put in a paper form. The 90% of services available online is actually, it's in the National Digital Strategy of all public services. People should be able to access all public services, 90% of them, online by 2030. That's the guideline. So that's obviously, we have to have that as part of our strategy as well. But I think that the key thing is choice. And for lots of people, if it's a transactional service, research has shown us when we've done it before for the channel management strategy and stuff, is that for transactional services, people just want to go online and do it. They don't want to have to ring you. They don't want to have to come in. So if they're applying for something, reporting something, just want to go do it, gone. And then for other types of services, obviously you need maybe more engagement. But again, it's around choice. It's not only, I suppose, is the key point we're keep trying to make. And in terms of iterative improvement, I suppose I meant it positively. Like we all know, it takes us a while to change things. So it's not like that services are going to be changing, you know, daily. They're not. I suppose what we're trying to get across is that we're constantly, it mightn't be perfect the first time it goes live, but we're trying to improve things all the time. So, and in that context, I suppose the question that was raised in terms of responses on choice-based lettings, like one of another councillor raised that can the replies be more transparent in terms of can we actually give more information when people are being refused or when, you know, can they get more information? So we're looking at that at the minute in terms of improving the response to on transparency. Councillor Portal, we're hoping to have it live for the next council. We've integrated Modern Gov with it, so we're doing a lot of work in the background. We're just trying to make sure that it's useful to councillors in the sense of that people are actually getting responses, if you know what I mean, because it's pointless otherwise because people won't use it. It's not going to be any more efficient for anybody. But again, that's we're trying to work across the organisation to get that in place for the with chief executives to get it in place for the next council. And I'm sorry, I know it's been promised for a while. I'm sorry for the delay. There was just one more thing about timeframes. Again, we have to look at that in terms of the processes, in terms of telling people, because each process is different, and it links in with the annual service delivery plan. So, for example, waste management would say they illegal dumping should be picked up within 24 hours of a report being made. What we're trying to do as part of the annual service delivery plan, which comes to council as well, is to report on what percentage of time that actually happens. So it's all tied up together, if you know what I mean. We're trying to link in the data, the annual service delivery plan and actual service delivery to give people a bit more information, I suppose, about how, when they can expect that result. So we are trying to tie it all in, and yeah, I suppose we're trying to do it better. That's all I'm saying. Thank you.
Okay, thanks to both of you for a really good presentation. And I will stress one thing. The responses we get from the area office are always really good. So the rest of the city council should aspire to be as good as the people in the South East Area Office. Okay, thanks very much. Okay, we're going to move on to one of the other really good officials in Dublin City Council. I'll do the roll call, Ed, who always does respond, Gerry O'Connell. So as Gerry's getting ready with his army of advisors behind him, we're going to have the roll call. Okay? Gerry, if you just get ready there, we'll...
Councillor Dermalacy.
Yeah, here.
Councillor Anne Feeney. Councillor Carolyn Moore.
Present.
Councillor Clare Bourne. Councillor Clare O'Connor. Councillor Daniel Ketchin.
Hello, her.
Councillor Danny Byrne. Oh. Councillor Deirdre Conroy.
Ansha.
Councillor Hazel Chu.
Present.
Councillor James Gagan. Councillor Kevin Donoghue.
Present.
Councillor Mannix Flynn. Councillor Fiona Connolly. Upstairs, there you go. Yeah. Councillor Paddy McCartan. Councillor Pat Dunn. And Councillor Tardisi.
Here.
Make sure.
Okay, thanks everybody. Are you ready or I can skip to the... You ready? Okay, I tell you what... Okay, so Gerry, you take over and we'll start then. Okay.
Can you hear me?
You have to press the white button there, Gerry, just behind the...
No, that one there.
Okay, well, thanks very much for this opportunity to present this. So this is the River Dodder Flood Alleviation Scheme, Phase 3. So it goes from Clonsky Bridge up to the boundary. And we have to do a flood scheme for both sides of the river. So it includes Dunleary, Ratdown, and I think we even protect two houses in South Dublin on the south side as well. Or we're hoping to protect two houses. So there are seven areas. The first area is in Dunleary.
Janny, could you mute yourself? Okay.
The first area, Area 1, is in Dunleary Ratdown, Orwell Gardens, which the corporate actually built in the 1930s, but it's no longer our responsibility. And then areas 2 to 4 are in the Dublin City area, and then the other three areas are in Dunleary Ratdown. So we'll concentrate on 2, 3, and 4, but we'll present them all, you know, so as you know what's proposed on both sides of the river. We're trying to push this project as quickly as possible. You probably know we had an orange level warning earlier in the year on the Dodder, and only for works in storing water in the Bohunabrina reservoirs, quite a few houses and properties would have been flooded on the Dodder. So this scheme is badly needed. And the Dodder itself is an incredibly steep and flashy river. From rain falling at Capuir, it can reach maximum flow levels in about 6 hours, 6 or 7 hours. So, you know, going out and putting things in place, we've kind of done away with temporary defences is virtually completely on it because there just isn't time to put them in place before flooding would occur. So Ivyani Berger here, he's the project manager from AESA, they're formerly Bern Luby, and Sean Harrington, who's a director on the project here as well. Right, I'll pass you over to Yanni.
Let me just share my screen there.
It's not sharing it. Who has to share this, yourselves or?
I don't know whether I need to share it. I'm connected, I'm in the meeting, so I can see myself, but I don't know how to, besides sharing it here, maybe just click on the presentation.
Okay, the sharing isn't happening.
No, it's not happening that way. Okay, so that share is different. Maybe we should go back into Zoom and share from there.
Okay, we're having some difficulty with sharing. I'm reluctant to go into the next item because there's traffic and there's a lot of items there.
Share from here.
So please bear with us for a moment or two.
There we go. And now I can pick that one.
Okay, you're on. Thanks.
Good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Jerry, for your introduction. I don't have to say anything else about us, myself, or the company. You know now that we are the consultants on this project. This project is still in stage one, but it's quite far advanced in phase one. I'm not sure which of the councillors has been in the previous presentation. We've done a previous presentation. My colleague, Kieran Thornton, former colleague, done
yeah,
a presentation.
Everybody here has been here for 5 years. So.
Everyone has been then there at the presentation in June, I believe, last year. So there's a bit of a repetition in the presentation, but don't worry about that. It's just I'll give a little bit of background and then run with the where we're going in terms of the preferred options and then the future activities that we're going ahead with. Okay, so that's just the contents of the presentation. Is that also shared then? No, that's fine. Okay, so basically the flooding in this area is quite fast. It's flashy. It's a flashy catchment. It just means it's a steep catchment, relatively steep catchment. So the flooding is happening quite quickly whenever there's flooding happening. On this map, you can see we are just working in really the top right of the. Can you see my mouse?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go. Next slide. Sorry about that. But on this catchment, we're just working in the top area of there. This is now the entire catchment of the River Dodder. But we just in this study on phase three is just in that bit. Then just the steering group, Dublin City Council, and obviously on the other side of the river, Dunluri. And this phase three is then, as I showed you the extents there. There will be maps coming, which is bigger and showing the exact extents from Orwell Road all the way down to Klonsky Road Bridge there. In terms of public participation, the top 1, 2, 3 events has happened in the past, and that last one was in June last year. And we intend doing another public consultation event in May. Today's consultation is not on that slide, but this is just a prelim of the presentation that will come for the public participation event. Okay. Then in terms of work done, all the kind of pinkish color there, that's the technical work that's been done up to now. And the greenish color there is the environmental work that's been completed on the project. The last few bullets on the environmental side, that's always a long process, so that will obviously feed into the end of the stage and then into planning. Work currently ongoing, site investigation, the grant investigation contract. The contract has been appointed. And they are just waiting for the licensing. They will be on site, I think, towards the beginning of June. So there will be some borehole drilling, some trenching, some physical work on site happening in late May, in June. The invasive species, the contractor intended to come to site last week, but the weather didn't allow, so I think he's going to be later this week, possibly be on site for some of the species for continuous treatment, and then a little bit later in the season for the rest of that. Top-up ecology, because the project is taking so long, there were some studies that we had to top up, and the wintering birds being completed, but the breeding birds is only starting that top-up now, and there was also an additional bat survey required. That is also ongoing. The contractor has been appointed, the specialist being appointed. Arboreal impacts has been done. We just need to finalize that report as soon as the preferred options is finalized. Then the preferred options will feed into the landscape and the photo montages just to finalize that presentation there. Then we're going into the rest of the stage one, which is assessment, the estimates, and the preparation of those environmental reports that is needed for the planning. The way we've assessed the scheme, we always start with the structural measures. What can we do? Which areas are in influenced by flooding? Can we relocate the properties? Can we relocate the stream or the river? Can we build a bypass channel? All those physical work properties that you can do in terms of solving the problem. In this case, none of those were really options. So we looked at the non-structural measures as well. Obviously, you can do some planning control. You can do some catchment management. In the building regulations, you can prevent people from developing in the flood-influenced areas, and you can make people aware that. But these ones are always running parallel with the real solution. So those ones are all good to implement, but they need to run parallel with actual solutions. And then those actual solutions, in this case, turned out to be the improvement of existing defences, new flood walls and defences, and possibly demountable flood barriers and gates. Our evaluation criteria during this stage one is always encapsulating all the social, economic, environmental, and the technical aspects of a scheme like this. Then on the preferred options going forward, like I said, it's basically coming to defences, to either embankments and walls, either improvements or new ones. And the photo or the image you can see there is actually one of the photo montages we've done before. That's just indicating a flood wall at Strand Terrace there with glass walls, which is part of the defence on top. We need the height, but obviously we don't want to block the entire view from everyone behind the wall. So that's why this solution came forward. It's just an example in this case. Other projects that we're coordinating and working close together with is the Dada Greenway, and there's also the rain garden there at the Nine Arches. This is a complete layout overview of the project, starting from basically from upstream. There's a small bit of the Little Dargle River. That's there's one solution defence that we propose implementing there. And then the rest of the defences are all along the River Dodder itself. First, 1A and B are on the southern side, so it's not for... Is there a question? Is there a problem? Okay.
I was just getting in there first.
Okay. We've just given them numbers, but we're on the southern and the northern side of the river there. Obviously, for this meeting, the northern side is the ones that's I'll go through the individual options, so that's just an overview map. So go to the next slide. Same layout, just the descriptions, and it might be difficult to read there, although it's not too bad. What's important here is the red bits there. So this is basically the descriptions of what's going to happen at each of those locations. At Dartry Mills, Dartry Park, Dodder Walk, that area which is on your side of the river, that particular one we're just going to defer for the moment because it's delaying the entire project at the moment. We just cannot come to an agreement with the other parties or all the parties involved, which is mainly the Dodder Greenway and also DCC Parks there. We will include this in the flood scheme. It will be part of the flood scheme, but at the moment we're going to defer that. It's going to run a little bit later because we're not all at the same stage of our projects, and as soon as we've got a combined integrated solution that we all agree on, that that will be incorporated back into the project. And then the other little red bit there is just an entrance through the wall into the park, just at the nine arches bridges there. That's an existing entrance through the wall from the street into the park there. Dave Weston from DCC asked me to just make a note on this. There's a possibility that DCC Parks wants to close this one off permanently in future. So if we don't, if that's the case going forward, it's still a long time until we get to construction, so there's just a possibility that this this one will be closed off. If that's the case, we're not going to do anything there. If it's,
what number is that?
What number?
Area 3C.
Sorry, it's Area 3C, and I'll just try and move my mouse. There's just at the nine arches.
Sorry, I was just asking to clarify that one. Explain again what you mean by what do you want to close off?
From the street, there's a low wall about 400 millimeters high, and there's a gap in that wall leading into a footpath going into the park. And DCC Parks, according to Dave, wants to build that in. They don't want that that entrance to remain there. Dada Greenway apparently wants to keep it open, so there's a slight disagreement there. Dave asked me just to make a note at the meeting that there's a possibility this will be closed off. If it's closed off, it will not form part of the... There's a slide coming up. I will explain that a little bit better.
Okay, and I wonder if the manager could get clarity on what's proposed there, not in relation to this, but any potential closing off to the area committee. If you could just clarify that.
Okay, then I will
be concerned if any part of their daughter was being closed off to people. So, let's just get the further information. Okay, thank you.
Okay, I think let's go through the... the more detailed slides now. That was just an overview. So this one is on the southern side of the river, so I'm going to skip this one. It's just Orwell Walk and Orwell Gardens there. This one is the one at Dartry, Dodder Walk.
Just back to that one.
Dartry Park. Sorry, just asked to go back.
The bridge there may be altered over the river. So that would, part of that would be in DCC.
Yeah, it will obviously then influence DCC.
At the high footbridge at the golf club.
Okay. We just need to. It's got sort of a palisade rail on it at the moment, and we'll have to make that a solid site if we want to make that part of the flood defence. So it obviously reaches across the river, so it will influence the DCC site as well. Good. Thanks for that, Jerry. Dodder Walk, Dartry Mills is the one that I said that's deferred now. At the moment, there's free access from Dodder Walk into Dartry Park here, and that we need to close that off with a flood defence. So it will be a combination of a flood wall or maybe an embankment with a ramp, a wheelchair ramp, and stairs over it. And then on the riverside, there will be a combination of solid wall, existing walls to be upgraded, which is the pinkish magenta colour there, and the blue indicates solid walls with glass frames in it for visibility through the wall. Okay. So this one is not a final or preferred option going forward yet. It's still to be agreed, but it'll be a variation of what you see on the screen there. Okay. The next one is in the dropping well pub area. On the Milltown roadside, again the pinkish line there will just, it's an existing low 300-400 millimeter wall on the side of the road, on the sidewalk. That just needs to be lifted a little bit. We need to add a bit to that wall. It goes up to about 0.8 meters high, that wall. It won't influence anything. And the red bit in the middle there, it's not going to be a wall. It's just going to be a new threshold, because we're going to construct a whole new parking lot, and that parking lot will have a driveway into the parking lot, the in and out there. So we just need to lift that the actual threshold of that driveway there to make sure that that's above our defended level. The red bits are all new walls then, and there's also an existing ECB transformer just close to the pub there that we need to move about 3 meters, maybe 4 meters, just to get our wall in there.
Use a mic because other people can't hear you.
Sorry, there's a piece of sculpture in there beside the dropping well pub that was placed in the Hippo, yeah. And when it does get floods or when it gets debris, it's inclined to catch the trees and stuff like that and build up. I just wonder what the state is of that particular artwork. Is it ours per art scheme? Will it be left there? Is it going to get removed? You know, I mean, because it is an issue. It can create problems. I mean, it's a lovely piece of work, but I think that it's stuck right in the middle and it can create, even when it's actually just normal, flow of the water, problems can happen within there and it can gather like a lot of debris and stuff. So I'm just wondering, have you looked at that? Is there any consideration on that? Thank you.
Yeah, we have talked to the owner, all right, about removing that, but negotiations are still going on.
Okay, I have to say I love it. I love that sort of madness in our city. We need a bit more of it. But let's go. I'm glad to see you're maintaining the access to the pool.
The only place it floods is the dropping well, the owner's premises.
Okay. So it's, we'll see this anyway. Okay.
I'm not sure I'm on or off now. Am I on?
You're on my screen anyway.
Just the sound.
You may have to hit it. Do you have to touch it?
Okay. I think that's it on this slide. The magenta portion on the bottom here is just existing walls that need to be lifted. It's crazy. The flood is really high there. The flood is like in 3 meters above the embankment level there, so it's going really high up there. These are the next two, the one just at Clausen's Bridge there. Both of them are existing entrances through that low wall on the street side. Because the flood level is actually going above that opening in the wall, we need to just do a small ramp up and then a ramp down again. So not much on the street side. It all remains in the park side. We'll just have a bit of a ramp up over the flood wall and then a ramp down, and then it connects back to the existing footpath and staircase there. On the other side, near Nine Arts Bridges, this is the one that I mentioned earlier that might be closed off in future. If it forms part of the flood scheme going forward, we will have to move this slightly, and this is due to the rain garden, I believe, that's got some development proposed in that area. So the little bit of a red line you see in that area there is just a closing in of the existing opening and then creating a new opening, I don't know, 10 meters further. Same thing, after the opening, we need to go ramp up a little bit to get to above the flood protection level and then ramp down again. So it's one of those kind of standard structures. Then on downstream side of Nine Arches, a little bit of increasing of the existing wall continues up to Shanagari Apartments. They've got an existing low wall with a palisade fence running all around the block there, and that needs to be replaced with a solid flood wall. I think there's a note of the height, 1.5 meters is going to be the height of this solid flood defense there. And because we're creating a solid flood defense, they've got two openings at the moment through that, two gates going towards the river, towards the footpath. The one will be closed off and the one will be kept, and that one that we keep needs to be provided with a ramp and wheelchair ramp to get over that flood wall to still have access to the back to the footpath there. The ones that you see on the top right there, they're on the other side of the river, so I'll skip those for now. Then all the way to Strand Terrace then, the small parking lot there. A combination of, again, increasing the height of the existing wall on the roadside. The entrance right in the bottom there is just on the flood defense level, so you'll see we'll have to close in. It's quite a wide one. It's about 5, maybe 6 meters wide, that opening. We'll close half of it in. We don't need all of it. It will still allow for access there, both for parks and for wheelchair access. And then at that parking lot, there's going to be loads of work there. That parking lot is very low. It's right below the flood level. So we need ramps there in combination with stairs right on the street side, because on the other side it's really high. And then the green bits there is an earthen embankment, and the red bit is a solid wall. On the next slide, you will see the rest of Strand Terrace. The rest of Strand Terrace, remember, you've seen that photo montage right in the beginning there. It's this area where there's that glass panel wall. It's a solid wall with some glass panels there to just keep the visibility there. There's a small existing path right where these parking two parking bays are, where the red bit is in the bottom, and we will have to close the wall in there, so that little path down to the river will be closed in. You'll have to go around into the parking lot and then to onto the path. Big advantage here for the public is there's going to be a new footpath running all along. Instead of going up to Strand Terrace, the actual Strand Terrace bit of road, you can stay along the river, and you can walk all along the river in the bottom and connect to the footpath on the other side. That little footpath is only above the 10-year return period flood. So whenever there's a flood of a higher return period, then that footpath will be flooded. But that only happens for maybe one day a year or not even that much. So that footpath will be a nice addition to the project.
You can see Scully's Field there just below that. So unfortunately, still with the revision, there's still quite a bit of flooding in Scully's Field. So development of it would be very problematic.
That's really sad to hear.
Sorry, I missed that. What did you say about Scully's Field? Sorry.
Yeah. Well, I'm only taking it if people just had clarity. Don't have a big long decision. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Keep on going.
Sorry, we can't hear at the moment online.
Mic's gone off. Yeah, thanks for that. Just
the mic went off. Is the microphone on?
Sorry, the mic went off accidentally. It's back on now.
Good. I'll start this one again.
Yeah.
Klonsky Road, Farmers Brown there. We will create new access into the parking lot. So there will be a new in and out ramp into the parking lot. The existing ramp along the road there, I think, I don't think it's an official ramp anyways, but you can drive up there. You can also drive in and out at the single lane on this area. Future proposal, two lanes, one in, one out. That ramp will be pedestrian ramp. Two additional lanes along the river, and that is for access to the cottage along the river on this side, basically to the Scully's Field side. What you don't see that clearly on this slide is that will be the high point. That red wall in the middle there will be the high point of a ramp going up to a high point over the flood defense and then down on the other side. And it is quite high. From the existing level, that will probably be 2 meters up still. So the red line there is a solid wall, and then the green bits is an earthen embankment, and that will end up on the northern side against the high ground. Where that letter A is. There's also a wheelchair ramp all along the vehicle access. You'll see the wheelchair ramp with all its landings there. It's just up along the red line and then over the embankment and then down on the other side. It's quite a long ramp. That's because we're going 2.5 meters up there from the existing level. Okay, so that's at Klonsky Road. The other ones on the southern side of the river, there's a little bit on this Dandrum Road. You can see the bridge railing again. We'll have to replace some of that bridge railing with a solid wall to make it part of the flood defense. That's the red line up there against Dandrum Road, and that will be obviously on your side of the river. The other work on the Islamic Center and Bankside Cottages on the south of the river. This is also at Dada Bank Apartments on the south of the river. There's an existing wall to be upgraded and also some new flood wall to be incorporated there. And then this is the one that was Little Doggle, Area 7. We move at Area 7 on the southern side of the river, but just for information, we basically just move the footpath entrance from the one side of that corner just to the other side to get to get above the flood level. And then there's a new footpath. That existing footpath there is quite steep. I don't think it's within the 1 in 20 regulation slope that we need to have. So there's quite a long new footpath that we add here for wheelchairs at that 1 in 20 slope. That was all the locations. These are just, like I said, we're still in stage one, and that's the approximate durations and program dates at the moment. So we're planning to go into the planning phase later this year, and then depending on obviously the time of that, we go into the next phases. Still way into future, 2030. Thank you very much.
Okay, thanks very much. I have four. I have you down, James. Paddy McCartney, dear to come.
And thank you very much for the presentation. If we thought the earlier phases there were complicated, this is certainly more complex. I'm very pleased with what has been achieved so far and the 35 million that was spent on upgrading up as far as the Anglesey Bridge from Ringsend to Anglesey Bridge in Donnybrook. But I have a number of questions on the procedures. Were always Part 8 procedures, as far as I was aware. This seemingly is going to bring it a Part 10. You might explain to me why a Part 10, given all the complexity that involves, why that's necessary. In terms of floodgates that have worked very well on the towards around Lansdowne Road and around the Balls Bridge, Irishtown, Ringsend area, are there floodgates being proposed? And also, where you have glass panelling in Balls Bridge along the walls, to what degree will the, at Shanagarry in particular, the glass panelling in the wall to improve visual aspect, how much of that is being planned? I would have concerns there about the coordination there with the Dodder Greenway project, because you know you've got that involved. You've got then another factor, Dunleary Rat Down. Now they have only a minor interest in this, as far as I can see. But are they going to go through the same procedures? And if, in the event, this thing about Scully's Field, as long as Councillor Lacey's been on the council, and as long as I've been on it, Scully's Field always rears its head in unusual ways. And can this project go ahead without resolution to some of the aspects that we know have bedeviled this council in trying to get progress on Scully's Field? And the other one then was the visual aspect is very important, but it's more important now given climate issues that the protection that has been brought in further down the river will be maintained.
Hi, did you see that presentation on the Dodder flood defences?
Whoever is speaking, and
I didn't know what was happening either, to be honest.
Cornelia, or I don't know who it is, or Carolyn. Yeah, you're muted. Okay, sorry. Go ahead, Paddy. Okay, thanks. Sorry for that interruption. Deirdre Conroy.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks also about the Greenway. But I think so many of us, so many of the staff were at a meeting there with some people a few months ago in that area of Milltown, just very close to the Milltown Golf Club. So that's what I want to know. You may have been telling us this, but I can't see it on your screen. There's about five or six houses up this narrow road, and they're quite elderly and some of them disabled. And they wanted to make sure and ask us all, can they have their cars to go back up into their driveways? So that's what I'm checking out, to see if the the system, they also asked that the greenway could be changed over closer to the, you know, behind the dropping well. And can that be done? Because it's a long, narrow road.
Deirdre, they're two totally different projects. The greenway still remains on the north side. And in my view, it's highly likely to stay that way, irrespective of the other option. But it's a totally different project you're referring to.
Oh, no, it's part of the Clonskee Bridge and part of Orwell nearby.
No, it's not, Deirdre. It's a totally different line and different route.
Okay, well, that's what I'm asking. A few months ago, they were told that it was going to be there.
It's a different project altogether and a different part of the Dodder. I'm not trying to be in any way rude, but it's just a different line. Okay?
Okay. And also along the Clonskee section of the Dodder, it's all for the cyclists and walkers. I would love to see it being widened for cyclists and safety along there.
Okay, well, I'll ask Councillor Gagan to take that up at the next Dodder Greenway Steering Committee. Okay, thanks. Is that okay? Okay, Claire Byrne. Yep.
Thank you very much. And thanks for the presentation. It's great to see progress happening on this. Just have a couple of questions. One is in relation to, you mentioned the upstream catchment management, which is really critical in terms of managing flooding downstream, obviously. And I'm just wondering, the Glenismole Valley project that was announced last year with National Parks and Wildlife, has there been much discussion with yourselves around that and how that may impact on the need for such a high level of engineering further downstream? I do welcome that there has been significant changes in terms of a move towards more nature-based solutions, although I was expecting to see more of that and less of the kind of, you know, 1.5 meter high walls with a glass top on top of them. I also have concerns that we would be lifting the threshold just to facilitate a new car park along the Dodder beside the dropping well, not suggesting that that isn't required, but I do have concerns that we are prioritising the needs of a car park over the needs of the natural habitat running alongside that. It's interesting what you have said about Strand Terrace and Scully's Field. And I'm sure you're aware that there has been a number of meetings in relation to that. They were to sit down with the flood defence teams. Have you had those conversations and have they been informed that are you stating that even with the flood defences proposed along there, that any type of development or even on the upper reaches of Scully Field is just not possible at this stage? And can I just ask, when in May do you think the consultation will be launched, and is that for a 6-week period? And when do we think works will start to commence then? Thank you.
Thanks, Claire. James Gagan.
Thank you very much, Chair, and thanks for the presentation. I might start at the end first, which is this issue of Scully's Field. And look, part of this is a bit of a comment, but like I do think it's disappointing that we had a process, and maybe, Jerry, you weren't aware of it, but we had a process where there were landowners involved. A lot of effort was put into getting them around the table, and then you come along and just sort of cursorily throw out that, by the way, even when we build this, you can't develop any homes on that site. And I don't think that that's an appropriate way to deal with a process that had taken a lot of work to get to even to that stage. And all of the questions that Councillor Byrne has just asked are the precise questions that, as I understood it, the developers were directly liaising with your department to get answers on. And maybe you've already corresponded back, and none of us who are on this other committee are aware of it, but certainly it's the first time that any of us, I think anyway, have heard the head of the flooding division of Dublin City Council explicitly state that there can be no development on the Scully's Field site, even with all of this flood relief measures that are being put in. So I'd ask you maybe to come back to us on that, but also to comment on what I've just said there. On the specific plan itself, the Parks Department previously raised issues in relation to Dartry Park and the playing fields. Just if you could clarify, are you satisfied that you're both at, there's a meeting of minds there, and that it's not going to interfere with the existing playing field for Ranelagh Gaels and any other club that might avail of those pitches. Thirdly, there was an issue raised there, in fairness, by Councillor Conroy, confusing the act of travel, Dodder Greenway, with the flood relief measures. And I think, you know, when you see the length of time it has taken, if I see your chart correctly here, 2019 was when all of this began, and it'll be 11 years from that moment before we'll have this in place. Could you maybe, and the idea, I think, originally in a lot of these Dodder Greenway proposals was that you'd be doing the flood relief and the cycleways kind of hand in glove, working together, and now it's kind of been hived off because we're trying to do something quickly. But could you maybe just explain to us, you know, why has it taken, because these are the questions we're going to be asked, why has it taken so long to put this project together and to get it to where it is at now? And what are the delays, or what have caused all of the delays, or have there been delays, or why is it going to take 11 years to put something like this, which in fairness, Jerry, you said is, you identified correctly, you know, that the Dodder is the level of flooding when you get to orange levels is so significant for both residents in the area and for the Dropping Well customers and everywhere else along the line. And just finally, I don't see a difficulty in trying to facilitate an existing car park in the Dropping Well when it comes to flood relief. And I understand the green agenda of trying to move people away from their cars, but like, I mean, I live up the road from that Dropping Well pub. Like, that place is packed. That car park is packed to the rafters, and I'm sure Councillor Lacey would agree with me on that. That's filled with people, elderly people, a lot of elderly people, families who come enjoy their Sunday lunch, Friday, Saturday. Like, I don't think we should be sort of, you know, having digs at all of that kind of a lifestyle and that business just because you guys are trying to facilitate an existing car park. Like, can we just get a bit realistic here for a second? You know, so there's nothing wrong with the flood relief measures trying to facilitate an existing car park. Like, there's literally nothing wrong with that whatsoever.
You know? Okay, Claire. Look, everybody can make their point. Claire. Yeah, I know. No, Claire, we don't have time. We know everybody knows. Everybody knows everybody's views, so let's just... Okay. You are asserting your political ideology. James is asserting his. So let's... Okay, just... Okay. No, just let's come on. Look, we're all... Claire, we're all grown up.
I didn't accuse you of making digs at the business.
James, just come on. Come on. Come on.
Accuse you of making any digs at the business.
Come on. Just... Okay. Let people make their points of view. Okay. Yes, okay, Claire. But just... James, are you finished? Yeah. You are finished. Yeah, okay. So just let's try not to interrupt each other, okay? Hazel, Chu, you're next.
Oh, can I come in now? Yeah. Thanks, Chair. So, in relation to... I know we all spoke about Spully's Field. I guess, Sherry, what I want to know is... because there's been, what, 3 meetings now, where the first one was attended by Richard in relation to Scully's Field and the developers. And one of the things Richard did say was that he was going to get various parts of the council together with the councillors and the developers to talk about this issue. And we had presumed that flood defences would be that part that he's talking about. So if there is a gap there, can we make sure we fill it? Because obviously from your remarks, which I didn't get earlier, but I seem to have got clarity from various other speakers on what was mentioned on Scully's Field, it sounds like there's a bit of a disconnect or a big disconnect between the plans here and also what the council is talking to developers and councillors on Scully's Field. So can we bridge that gap quickly, be it that you join our next meeting when it comes to Scully's Field, or that you chat to the various members of the team that is dealing with Scully's Field? Last one that was added was Brian and Carl. So I don't know who is now taking over since Carl is not there. not with us here. So maybe it's Frank. So we would like some clarity. Otherwise, it would just become a stalemate like it has been for the last God knows how many years. And if that's going to be the case, then it would be something we'd rather know sooner or later, because residents keep on asking us around the area as well. So in relation to Strand Terrace, I know this might come up in consultation phase, but there has been a number of residents there that have already spoken to the engineers, spoken to yourselves in relation to kind of the wall there. They're slightly happier that it's now going to be a glass wall, but there is a patch there that if it gets cleared, it's the green patch beside the Strand Terrace there, that they have had to do themselves over the years. So if there's any build or anything, what will happen is it will actually increase the rats that go into the area. There's already been a rat issue. So how is how would the plans be in relation to working with residents there to mitigate against vermin concerns, because that is going to be a big concern around all that stretch as well. And lastly, I guess on the business front, we're not against business, James, but one thing is if the dropping well is going to get a more preferable lease term on their car park, then that's something us councillors need to be able to discuss and not just throw away. So that's a proper discussion to be had some other time. Thank you.
Thanks, Hazel. Mannix, last speaker besides himself.
Thank you very much, Councillor Lacey. Thanks very much for the excellent presentation. Just to say at the outset, the work that's been going and ongoing here is just spectacular. I mean, you've actually managed to radicalise and actually save quite a lot of the Dodger Greenway and make it like a beautiful and absolutely fantastic amenity. These measures, I imagine, in the main are health and safety, with the added on of the amenities within them. I'm disappointed that there isn't any kind of plan for the Scully Field, because again, you know, we need to know what is it that is actually holding up that, what is the problem besides, like, you know, how we can actually address or put something on that field that would be by way of amenity. I think you can look at, because certainly in other countries they can, you know, address those particular issues while the waters are there. And mankind has been building on water for an awful long time. So you could possibly take a look at that. So I don't know whether it's in the budget or whatever it is, but it simply can't actually lie there. Again, going back to the issue of the dropping well and indeed the car park issue that's been raised, I think we need to have much more of a say within that, because it just simply can't be a car park. It has to be something else, like an amenity within there, because I say it's not going to be full of cars 24/7, and we need to have something in there by way of some amenity for children, maybe, who knows what other possibilities are there. But what would concern me is the actual issue in relation. Now, I do like the hippo, don't get me wrong. I think it's very nice, it's all good. But the point of the matter is, it's not governed by any particular legislation or law. It's nothing got to do with us. And to a large extent, to use the word, it's illegal. It's in breach of planning. It's stuck right in the middle of the river. It does create particular problems, you know, and I don't understand why it's not being addressed in this particular report. Because if it's left there, it's going to be problematic. Because it does tend to gather up the weeds and stuff like that. So I do think it's something that needs to be addressed. Perhaps that hippo might want to go into the car park or whatever, or an appropriate artwork that would go through the percent scheme, you know, would go through the Arts SPC, go through the area committee, could go there if the owner of the pub wants to add money to that, well and good. But I think this is good. You know, I certainly think it's going to, you know, enhance, and I think it's going to lead to better safety, because it is a very fast, you know, river. You know, it is a very fast flood. It happens very, very quick. And also, I think it gets fed from an awful lot of sources, not just its main source, but there's a lot of sewage going into it, as far as I'm aware, and a lot of, you know, water coming in from all the other areas. But as I say, we are addressing that particular issue. So long may that be the case. Thank you.
Thanks, Mannix. And just for my own part, first of all, thanks very much for the presentation. And also thanks for all the work that has been done over the last number of years, because a huge amount of progress has been made. And I agree with James Gagan about the timescale. I'm not too sure that that's your fault. I think our systems, our procedures, our planning requirements, our procurement policies, all of those things add to incredible delay, and anything that could be done, I'd support minimising that. I grew up along the Dodder, within about half the length of this room from the water, so I've known the Dodder all my life. As an aside, I love the hippo.
I love where it is. I hope it stays there. I think it adds to the fun and the enjoyment of the river by a lot of people. But, I mean, that's just a personal choice. There was a lot of work done on the Milltown Park biodiversity plan, that green space beside Strand Terrace. I just wonder if there's any development of that. On the Strand Terrace glass, what did you call it, platform? Just a question, is the glass on sort of the inside, in other words, is it close to the houses or is it close to the river? Because I think it creates a different atmosphere depending on which side it's on. There's been a lot of talk, and I heard Minister Ryan say it about a month or so ago, about moving the weir just slightly downstream from Clonskee Bridge. I'm not quite sure. I mean, I heard him refer to some government decision on it. I just wonder if there's anything on that. And I'll let, if you have anything on that, you can come in. On Scully's Field, look, we've been talking about this forever. It seems to me that the problem at this stage is that the principal owner of Scully's Field is not engaging in the process in the way that I thought they would. I mean, my view all along was that we would try and contribute the car park at the pub as a development site in return for development on Scully's Field. The developer seems to think that that they can develop on Scully's Field and the car park, and for me that's just not an option. So I think that's what needs to be done. On the car park at Dropping Well, I agree with James Gagan. I mean, it's a pub. People do. It's primarily, I can see, a food destination where people go for lunches and dinners and family occasions, etc. And that does require a car park. And we do have a say over it. We lease it every 5 years or something. So we do have a say in whether or not it's allocated to the pub. We own it as a city, and it's leased to them. But I want to wish you all the very best. I think it's a really important piece of work. Probably we'll have differences, you know, as we go along. If we could resolve the Scully's Field issue as part of this, it would be brilliant. But that requires all parties to the table to be willing to agree, and I just don't see that being the case at the moment. Thank you. Yeah, but be quick.
Just in relation to the Parks Department and their willingness to close off green areas, I wonder, could you make available a separate report as to how the Parks Department have come up with that idea that they want to close off?
Well, we have asked for that earlier on.
Okay, thank you. Sorry.
And we'll get that circulated. Okay.
Chair, it's a rhino.
Sorry?
I just want on record. I just want on record. It is a rhino. It is a bronze rhino. I know you and Mannix are talking about hippos there, but if you've seen it lately, it's definitely a rhino.
Well, I'm glad of that clarification of the difference between a rhino and a hippo. Undoubtedly, it wasn't something I learned very well in school, but I appreciate that clarification, Councillor Chu. Okay, Danny, Jerry.
Yeah, so it does have a horn, so I assume it's a rhino. But, okay, so the first one, yeah, part 8 and part 10. Well, thanks very much for all your compliments on the scheme. And yes, it is very difficult to get these large schemes. They tend to take 5 to 10 to 15 years to get them through. I suppose the main reasons are, COVID came into it. Planning slows things down by at least a year. Up to 4 years on the poddle it took us to get through planning. Stakeholder engagement as well, getting everyone to agree. You know yourselves that it's difficult to get agreement in certain areas. The procedure, the part 8 and part 10, because this is, there are so many environmental consequences, you know, to this scheme. It will be a part 10 application to the department. We have kind of reached our limits earlier on part eight procedures. In fact, I got various warnings from the board, you know, that I was at my limit on that. So unfortunately, this will have to be a part 10 procedure. But we will bring everything to the area committee and to the full council, you know, to get your comments on the final proposed scheme. And also, you're welcome along to the public consultation days as well. The floodgates, the tidal region. We normally have up to 2 to 3 days to predict flooding on the tidal element. So there are floodgates are a possibility, but on the river, and particularly this river, there's only a few hours warning. So we've avoided floodgates and temporary defences as far as possible, except when we're very near the top of the scheme. Not too sure about glass panelling on Shanagarry.
No, at the moment there's no glass panelling at Shanagarry. The wall height there is 1.5 metres. I don't want to make excuses. I'm only on this project now for the last 6 months, so it was slightly before I started there, but there's no glass panelling on the Shanagarry flat wall. The proposed.
Okay. Well, we will consult with the residents on that, on, you know, if we should put a number of glass panels into the wall. The Dodder Greenway, yeah, we work in consultation with the Dodder Greenway. We have a meeting about once a month with them, or phone calls and that on it. So we are both keeping an eye on each other. But it's kind of debatable who's ahead of each other on these schemes. So we are in consultation with them on a continuous basis. Scully's Fields, yeah, we don't really need to put any flood defences on Scully's Fields, so we haven't really changed the current designation of the field. I'll get more information with the current flood maps on how much of it. Currently it can be developed for water compatible elements, which could be parkland and that, you know, so that's possible at the moment. But I'll get you more information on the current flood extents of the field. The visual impact is one of the real problems with the scheme, that where you have buildings and you have the river, you have to put something in the way of the river. Like we have storage in the reservoirs in Borna Breena. We looked at the area that's planned to be developed in the Dennismall Valley, but it's only 4 square kilometres and sometime in the distant future, so the contribution of that is quite small compared to flood flows. So unfortunately, the visual impact, which we've reduced as much as possible, is probably the worst element of the proposed scheme, but we've done our best anyway to minimise that. Let's see, the next one then, the upstream catchment. The car park beside the dropping well, yeah, we have made provisions for what the Parks Department and the dropping well want with the new car park. But, you know, it's still, we're on the emerging option, so, you know, it's still up a bit for discussion. I know disabled fisher people and that get in there to fish on the Dodder, but yes, I kind of, you know, we're still a bit flexible on that, but we're preparing for what's likely to be the outcome on that, but it's not totally set in stone. Strand Terrace, yeah, we've had a lot of discussions with the residents in Strand Terrace, and they seem happier than we were, so we'll contact them about that that green area. So we will have another chat with them about their concerns.
That's where the glass panels are, sorry.
Yeah, the glass panels are there, yes. Yeah, there are. Yeah, we had a large number of discussions with them. The existing playing fields, I don't think we're causing any disruption to the Indartry.
Yeah, we had discussions there with the users of the park, the Indartry Park, and we will have hoarding at the most on the side of that, but we will not go into any of the playing fields that, or the part of the fields park that they use. So they were very concerned about that, that we didn't contact them earlier. We would have if we really had to make use of any of that, but even the temporary works during construction will be right on the side of the park. And like I said, at the moment that particular location, the solution is still a little bit hanging between parks, Dodder Greenway and ourselves, but I can't see that we're going into the park. We'll stay on the site there on a Dodder Walk site.
Yeah, so the main kind of controversial areas are with the parks and also with the biodiversity. Greenscapes is still planned near the Nine Arches. Yeah, we're happy to be at meetings on Scully's Fields. You know, we're happy to attend those and give our our opinion as to flood risk and designations and that. I think that's most. Let's see.
Okay, James, and just to
remind anybody, it's not even a question for Jerry. It's just on foot of what Jerry very kindly offered to do there about being participant in these meetings.
He has been at them.
Sorry?
He has been at them.
My memory was that the last meeting was the agreement was that the landowners were to go away and to deliberate with the flooding department. And I'm just suggesting that at the next meeting that we all, that Jerry be there and whoever from the department as well. That's all.
That's fair enough. I think Frank Lamb wants to come in on this and then we'll...
On the environmentalist aspect, we took about 75,000...
Your mic, Jerry, yeah.
We spent about 75,000 so far removing invasive species on both sides of the river to date. So we are doing what we can for the environment as well.
That Frank, do you want to come in?
Yeah, Dermot, can you hear me?
Yep.
Just very quickly, just to confirm that over the next few weeks, I will bring clarity to the Gullies Field issues in relation to the flooding concerns that have been addressed here today. And the overall City Council position. And we will arrange a further meeting, Councillor Gagan suggests. But that we'll have that resolved somewhat over the next year.
Okay, thanks, Frank. Okay, and the developer, be aware of, how far we're prepared to go and how far we're not prepared to go. Sorry, Hazel, do you want to come in again? I can't see the faces. That's my problem. Sorry, but it's...
Jerry, thanks for agreeing to meet Strand Terrace. Can you... I'll give you John Farrelly's contact. He and a few residents, I think, spoke to your team before, and he was just on to me there. He's more than happy to be the contact if you're chatting with them again, so I can send it to you.
Okay. Thanks for that. I think he probably has that anyway. Okay. Thanks very much to both of you and to all your team behind you. And we're going to keep on moving because, as I said, it's 4:10, not 3:10. We're moving on to traffic and we're going straight into the tag. Pages 114, as I find it myself. Okay, Pat Dunn and Bannock Flynn as first two. Pat, thanks, Jerry. Thanks, Danny. Okay. I'll take everybody, yeah. And if everybody would really be quick if you can, Pat.
That's right.
Yeah, and that's not directed at you.
I didn't delay you on the River River Dodder, sorry.
It's only because of the time, that's all.
In relation to the TAG report, item number 10 is to do with a request for double yellow lines on Brickfield Drive. It was submitted by a resident. I know the resident is chairperson of the local residents association there and had consulted with other residents on the road. Brickfield Drive has a major development taking place. It's a cul-de-sac, and at the three quarters way down that cul-de-sac there's 280 new apartments under construction. At the moment, there's problems with construction traffic and sort of people who are working on the site illegally parking there, although both the local Gardaí and indeed the residents group and the developers have tried to alleviate that as much as they can. But the real fear is that when 280 new residents move in, or there will probably be about 500 residents, because a lot of them will be two-bedroom apartments, that it's going to have huge traffic implications and parking implications for Brickfield Drive. And while they accept the decision in the TAG report not to recommend double yellow lines at this point in time, and you refer to possibly sort of pay and display on that road, can I ask that this be revisited as soon as those apartments have been occupied? Because it is a matter of real concern. We had a major issue on Galtymore Road around the corner there last year where a much smaller block of apartments caused huge parking problems on the main road. So it's something to be aware of and to revisit, please.
Thanks, Pat. We'll take in the five people in besides myself, so we'll take them in. Mannix?
Thanks very much, Councillor Lacey, and thanks very much to the TAG report. Just two items that I don't see listed there, which I've been harping on about for quite some time. One of them is the traffic congestion and danger in the York Street, Mercer Street area as you go up by the back of the car park there, which is attached to the Royal College of Surgeons and the Grafton shopping centre. It is really, really, I say it's one of the worst and most dangerous places within the city. It's very badly lit. Children now in the locality have to go down the opposite side of the street. It is so dangerous. You don't know where people are coming from. No one, and they all ignore the signals and they come up that hill at enormous speeds. Bearing in mind the amount of cars that are parked within the area, it is really, really, really very important that something be done. Either you light it up proper and right, or you slow down the situation, or you put something. The other issue then is in relation to the traffic mitigation measures of putting a school zone at St. Enda's. Now, I note that we're going to be removing the parking on Protestant Road there, just at the back of Anger Street there, beside the YMCA. That's simply going to lead to a speeding situation where they're going to come out of Bishop Street and down that way and come speeding down that area when taking that mad turn, because you can't see around that corner because of the way those apartments, Adelaide apartment, have come out and protruded themselves onto that road. They take that turn, you know, which is a wide enough area, and I don't know how many near misses has happened already. It's just going to get worse. If we could fast-track, please, you know, the mitigating measures there, and particularly in relation to the school children in the daytime, in the morning time, and just for the elderly people that were in there, trying to even cross that section of road, Councillor Lacey, I'm sure you're aware of it, you don't know where to look. It's so wide, you don't know what's coming at you. So if we could do something there, I'd really, really appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Manix. Carolyn Moore.
Thanks, Chair. And in an effort to be as quick as possible, I won't repeat Councillor Dunn's query, but I do support it and that request. It's item 26 primarily that I want to come in on, and that's the double yellow lines on Aideen Avenue. The request to extend the double yellow lines is recommended, but the measure described is actually an extension of the continuous white line. So I'm hoping someone can confirm which it is and where it'll be extended to. And I suppose, what's the assurance that it's going to have the desired effect over double yellow lines? I just want to note as well that I had a request relating to double yellow lines on Aideen Avenue last year, which was not recommended for the usual reasons that it's not Dublin City Council policy to install parking restrictions where they're already covered under legislation, and instances of illegal or obstructive parking should be referred to Dublin Street Parking Services. So I am curious as well. I absolutely welcome, whether it's the continuous white line or the double yellow lines, any intervention here to tackle dangerous parking, because it's gotten really out of control here. But I want to know why that was the decision then and this is the decision now. And I would note also that in September of 2021, on the TAG report, the Gardaí had requested double yellow lines at the entrance to Aideen Avenue from Kimmage Road Lower. And this was recommended within 3 months of them making that request. So, and I'm not being smart here, but it does kind of make me wonder if we should actually be asking the Gardaí to support our requests, and if that would help us to overcome this kind of ongoing inconsistency around what they, what will or will not be recommended and why. And I just want to mention as well the fact that the danger here is not restricted to parking issues. The parking issues are affecting Aideen Place, which is the Muse development, Aideen Drive and Aideen Avenue, but it's not restricted to parking issues. The unenforced right-hand turn ban off the Lower Kimmage Road onto Aideen Avenue is an ongoing problem. There is a question on that on the agenda this month. We discussed a motion on that in October, and it was mooted in response to that motion that we might look at, or there might be a necessity for a neighbourhood traffic scheme. And I think we are at the point where that is going to have to be investigated, because there's a whole network of roads here. There's a multitude of issues, and the potential for knock-on impacts from one intervention is just too great, that and it just needs a holistic approach. And I just quickly, Chair, want to also mention Kimmage Grove and the detailed reply in response to a question this month. And one of the points on that is about the use now of 52-seater coaches. And the response to the question here is, once parked legally, a coach is permitted to park on Kimmage Grove. But can I ask for clarification on how a 52-seater coach parks legally
on a residential road. It's not especially wide of a road. It's not especially narrow. It's just a normal road with no demarcated parking. So I'm curious as to how that's going to enter the mix now. And this has this kind of issue of a sort of a traffic management plan for Kimmage Grove has been kicked to the curb on a number of times. And they've stated outright in the response to the question this month that there is no mechanism that they can take here. In December, I asked for a yield sign coming out of the club. That was refused on the basis that it's a private landing and the responsibility of the club. So can I ask as well, can we write to the club and ask them to put up a sign asking members to yield to local traffic? Or can is that are they not allowed to put up a road sign themselves? I'm just not clear on how we can just be kind of writing this off as an issue that we can't solve. Thanks,
Carolyn. Tara?
Thanks, Chair. Neil, where are we with the Crumlin Road? I was just wondering if I could get some kind of an outline in terms of the softer measures, the medium measures. Where are we with that? If I could get a bit of an update on that, it'd be great. Thanks, Neil.
Thanks, Tara. James?
Thanks very much, Chair. In the report, you say that you have recommended to remove the two parking spaces on Sandymount Avenue to facilitate Enable Ireland School. Has the issue about the money, I don't know if you remember this, but has that been resolved? Are you going to charge Enable Ireland for doing this? Previously, you said you were. I sent an email back and forth about this with the school. Obviously, it's a school that looks after some of the most disabled children really in the country, and it was on that basis I was supporting their application that you'd waive any fee against them because they actually have to go off and fundraise just to remove those spaces. So the fact you've actually recommended to remove it, just if you could clarify the money point. Thanks.
Thanks, James. Claire?
Thank you. Just want to welcome, but also have a question in relation to the proposed traffic calming in Ringsend Park. Is that just going to be speed limit signage, or because I would have thought that road is it wide enough for ramps, or was it examined for ramps, or is it just the signage that's proposed to go in there? I'd just like to support Councillor Flynn and the issues he raised around St. Enda's there and the removal of parking. I cycle there every day and it's absolutely lethal, and I would share his concerns about removing parking there because it does serve to slow the traffic coming round that bend, as would the school zone that they've applied for would also help to calm the traffic down there. There's the school, there's also creche around the corner. There's two creches, sorry. There's the Whitefire, there's the YMCA. So there's an awful lot of children in that area at peak times. So we really need to prioritise safety here. Also, there's been a lot of roadworks there lately. It seems to be putting down some kind of utilities. It's been left in an absolute mess. There's from pretty much Peter's Place all the way up to St. Enda School, there's just a massive lump of tarmac being dumped on the road and on the footpath, and it's really unsafe. So if that could be looked at immediately, I'd be very, very grateful. And just on that issue, for the last two meetings, I've requested an update on road and footpath resurfacing after utilities works, and I see it's not on the agenda again for this month. We've one meeting left.
It's on the agenda for me.
Is it? Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, Councillor Deirdre Conroy, then Councillor Fiona Connolly. Deirdre?
Thanks, Chairperson. Just in regard to the long inquiry that came from Kimmage Grove residents, I have some response, but the maintenance of the green area at the entrance of that Kimmage Grove, they ask that Dublin City Council, can the council confirm that the green area is council land and it's designated public open space, because there is no safe crossing point for children to cross at the gate of the Larkview Football Club. So there are other inquiries about it as well, but that is one of the main issues I would be concerned about, children in that. Now, there are other inquiries, but I have responses to them. And it's about the public footpath that has been removed, making the crossing unsafe.
Thanks, Deirdre. Councillor Connolly?
Thanks. Just want to say that I did meet with Larkview Football Club, and the buses tend to park to the left of the gates on entry, so they seem to work pretty well there. I've used the venue as a school teacher and as a coach, as a football coach, and it has worked well. So they just parked to the left. I met with the residents of Kimmage Grove, and we have spoken to parents of the club, so I've done a huge amount of work with that. So hopefully driver behaviour is improving. And on the Lark or the 18 Avenue issue, on the increasing the double yellow lines, I would welcome that because it'll increase visibility for residents leaving 18 Avenue and turning either right or left onto the Lower Kimmage Road, which is also a tricky turn to take. So increasing the double yellow lines or indeed the white midline will be help on both on that issue. So thank you.
Thanks, Fiona. Just for my own part, I had a sister who attended the Enable Ireland School, so I very much support James's wish that they wouldn't be charged for it. You finally removed the car parking bay that you didn't want to remove on Greenfield Park, so thanks for that. You've also agreed to remove a sign that I've been asking for years would be removed in Greenfield Park. I see today you've agreed to remove it, so... maybe new officials have new ideas and better responses, so I'm glad to see that. On the negative side, on 6 and 7, in relation to Mount Pleasant Terrace, you reject all of the proposals that the residents have made, but you don't make any proposals. And I think it's incumbent when you're saying no to their ideas that you might come up with some new ideas. I'm repeating what I said at the beginning of the meeting. Question 12 at the last area committee for the yield sign outside Donnybrook Church. It's just literally putting a yield sign on a pole that's already there, and it would make it safer. I would ask that you would look at it again. And finally, I got emails, and I think maybe the other councillor for Pembroke probably got it as well, about the traffic signals at Wellington Place, Wellington Road, Clyde Road Junction. A resident requested a shift of the times and made a very strong case in narrative terms for us, and I would ask that would be looked at again. Okay, over to you, Colin, for all of those. And we aren't even heavily knocking on doors yet, so you can imagine what it's going to be like in May.
Okay, I'll just respond to some of the queries there, and Neil will jump in as well. Councillor Dunn, we can have a look at Brickfield Drive once those apartments are in. If you want to remind us about it, feel free to do so. But we'll note it down and have a look at it in the future. The no right turn on 18 Avenue. I think I'll let Neil respond to that one. Kimmage Grove. There are a lot of councillors have made representations on that. It's a difficult situation there. There are the road markings. There are signs in there already. If there is a solution to it, a long-term solution, I think part of that is going to come from enforcement of the measures that we have put in there already, and something from the if there's engagement from the club itself, if they can be better neighbours to the people there. I know they're providing a service to the community there, but I think working with the neighbours better will help as well. Just on Crumlin Road, Councillor Deasy, we're meeting on the 18th, I think it's Thursday the 17th, with the residents again. It'll be our third meeting with them. A couple of things that we're progressing at the moment is the remarking of all the line marking, repainting of the line marking in that whole area. From the Garda station down to the bridge, we're almost there with putting in the speed radar signs. Also liaising with the Bus Connects team. There will be in the next couple of weeks progress on making the bus lane from about the Maxwell Garage down to the. Down to Dolphin House and down to the junction there with the South Circular, making that a 24/7 bus line, and also putting in some bollards near the Maxall station. So that should improve the situation there as well. And maybe I can go through the rest of our updates when we meet the residents in next week. Councillor Gagan and Councillor Lacey, just on the Sandymount. I know myself, I've been in the facility there myself. I know the tremendous work that they do there. I think what we're trying to achieve here on the waiving of the fees is just good governance on that. You know, everybody across the city, no matter commercial, private, whatever, you know, whoever is asking, needs to go through a process. We're talking about taxpayers' money here. You know, it's a revenue stream there that you know, pays for the work that we do, the work that everybody else, other departments do. So it's just making sure that process is properly gone through. I'm afraid I'm not aware where it's at the moment, but I can provide you with an update, both yourself and Councillor Lacey, on that. But you know, we're not trying to put the gun to anybody's head, or we're not trying to get money out of charitable organisations. It's just making sure that taxpayers' money is properly accounted for.
They put the application in 2 months ago, would have CC'd me on the email. We did it straight after the last council meeting when we raised it. So if you could come back just pretty quickly on it, like I presume it's gone through the process. Thanks.
Let me see. I'll let Neil come in on some of the other issues there.
Okay, thanks, Colin. Neil? Okay. You tap four now, so just Neil?
I'll be pretty quick, councillors. Yep. Just with Councillor Pat Dunn there on Brickfields Drive, like, we will look into it for the future, like when the apartments are done, but maybe you should be talking to the council or to the local community. Would they consider a pay and display scheme in that area? Just because, like, they take a while to put in, so just have that consideration and talk with the local community. That's the first thing I would say there. To Councillor Flynn, York Street, Mercer Street, we will have a look at that area for you. And with regard to the school zone at St. Enda's, I will talk to the school zone team and see what measures are they putting in to slow down traffic in that area and coming out onto the little laneway. And also with to do with the roadworks, I'll try to find out who's doing the roadworks there. I know it has been going on for a while, and make sure that the road surface gets back into a proper condition. Regarding ADN Avenue, I think, like, just to let you know that a continuous white line in the middle road stops people from parking either side of it. So that's why it's a better measure than WL lines, because vehicles are allowed to park on a WL line for loading and unloading for half an hour. So when there's a single white line on the road, it'll stop people parking there, and it's a more easier enforced measure by our parking enforcement team. To do with Kimmage Grove again, there was a couple of queries regarding ownership of the parkland there. We'll have to find out from our parks team on that. With regard to any entrance coming out onto a public road, like, the vehicles from the side from a private area have to yield to the public road. So there's no real requirement for a yield sign measure, and that's similar to Councillor Lacey's query coming out of the church at Donnybrook. There's no physical requirement to have it. The main road has control of the road, and people on the side road have to wait till vehicles come out. Councillor DC's question has been answered on Crumlin Road at the speed radar signs. Sandymount Avenue, the measures are going through the tag procedure to get the two spaces as is, and two new spaces will be put in further on the west side of the Sandymount Avenue. Councillor Byrne on Ringsend Park, I can't give you an answer on that. I'll have to come back to you on that over the speed limits there. Again, Kimmage Grove, again, 7th grade, 18th Avenue. Look, I have been talking to the guards at the Gardaí at the TAC meeting too, as well, to stop the right turn ban between 7 and 10 in the morning. Vehicles coming in there, they're going to be monitoring it in the next week or two, because when the schools are back, just try to stop people making that illegal right turn movement. Would Councillor Lacey, I know you had queries up Mount Pleasant, Pleasant Terrace. Look, we're not in favour of doing any measure there yet. Like, we know the speeds are low in the road. Look, I can get a speed survey and show that the speeds are low. But look, we will look into it more. With regard to Wellington Place, Clyde Road signals, I have spoken to our signals team upstairs, and they will respond to you, Councillor Lacey. So that's really the majority of answers. If anybody has more queries, please let me know.
Any more queries, can they just email Neil and Colin, because we still have a lot to deal with on the agenda. Okay, we're
Chair.
Carolyn, please be quick.
Yeah, I will be quick. I asked very clearly where the continuous white line would extend from and to on Aideen Avenue, and that wasn't answered. Thanks.
Okay, Colin or Neil, can you answer that at this stage?
I will respond to Councillor Moore on that, because I'll get the measurements and let her know. Okay.
If she replies to the five in the well,
yeah,
came,
yeah,
came
all the councillors will.
Yeah.
All
okay.
Councils.
Thanks very much. I'll prove my own word here now. Motion number three, I'll accept the report. Okay. Motion number five, I'll accept the report, except I don't understand it. You're saying you're not putting in the yellow box because it's the area is potential for inclusion in works package number 11. Now, I haven't a clue what works package number 11 means.
Councillor Lacey, we are looking at tightening up that junction of out there in Donnybrook. We're going to tighten up the junction and make it easier for people to cross the road, like the pedestrian movements across the road. So that's what we're looking at, making it a better junction.
Okay, could you do me a favour and just send me two or three sentences on what works package number 11 means? Because if I send this to the person asking me, they'll say, what on earth are council talking about?
You'll all be finding out on work package 11. We'll be sending on the details to you. Okay?
Well, yeah, it's slightly dangerous and messy junction. Okay, motion, I'm going to take 6, 7 and 10 together. And the first one is 6 from James Gagan and Anne Feeney. They all relate to traffic in Rennell and the Rathfarnham and Busk corridor. Okay, James.
Thank you very much, Chair. look, this motion is very, very... I know there are other motions, but I really think if we pass this motion, it's very, very straightforward as to what policy we as the City Council are setting when it comes to proposed turn bans in the NTA planning application for the Bus Connects corridor that is currently live and before on board Planola. Anyone with an ounce of sense, and I include every traffic engineer within Dublin City Council, if they assessed, which they haven't because it's not their application, if they assessed the turn bans that are currently proposed in this planning application, would completely recognise just how daft they were. They are locking in roughly to 2,000 to 3,000 people on those various adjoining roads into imposing additional 3-kilometre circuitous journeys in order to go to basically anywhere that's not the south side, or that's not in the south direction towards the city. So that includes Vincent's Hospital and everywhere else. It's completely insane. And the reality is that it will be unbelievably unfair and disproportionate to expect that the only mechanism by which a person who lives in this area could make a representation or could be consulted on this is if they paid €50 to a Bord Planola Bus Connects planning application on a corridor to which they don't benefit from, because the corridor is not running through these roads. The issue here is that as a result of the introduction of the corridor, the NTA, they presumably had to do this in their planning application, set out how they would deal with traffic diversion. And I don't know how they came up with this idea. It obviously just fitted into the algorithm or whatever. They just drew a straight line across every single feeder road that goes into Ranelagh Village and said you can't take a turn, you can't turn right in this. Now, legally, no matter what happens with the on board Planola decision, for every turn ban, Dublin City Council has to consult with the Garda Síochána. Now, presumably they'll immediately express concerns about the number of U-turns that will be taking place in Ranelagh Village if you did introduce this. But secondly, it's important that we reject the report to my motion and to the other motions, that we accept the motion, because if On Bord Pleanála do impose planning conditions requiring 24-hour turn bans on all of these roads, and Dublin City Council's answer to that is we must comply with the On Bord Pleanála planning decision, well, you know, this City Council has been in lots of legal wrangles over the years, and we're the elected members. We set the policy. It's not the NTA who are going to be charged with implementing this. It's not the NTA who are going to be charged with overseeing its implementation. If On Bord Pleanála make the foolish decision of not allowing a significant amount of latitude to this local authority, let the policy be set by the passing of this motion that there will be a local public consultation before any of these turn bans be introduced. Thanks.
Thanks, James. I have Anne Feeney, then Danny Byrne, and I don't know if Hazel, is Hazel still on the line? Just, I want to take in the three proposals just first.
Hazel is on the line, Chair. Do you want to take the three motions together?
Yeah, I'm going to deal with the three together.
They're the same, to be honest, so.
Yeah, the core issue is the same, so if you just, yeah. Go ahead. Go ahead.
Do you want to take Anne first, because she was joined with James?
Look, just
okay, sorry,
on.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
Bringing
just
Anne in. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead, Hazel.
Okay, thanks, Chair. Sorry, just on that, I know we all spoke about it. We all were all at the meeting the other night with the residents as well. There's quite a lot of views on this, and mainly is that the residents feel like they're being bypassed in relation to the particular turns. So not all residents were objecting to bus connects. I think there's two very different issues here. There's bus connects, and then there's the specific turn bans. So on a local traffic management level, I think we as a council should be able to manage that expectation of residents and be able to provide that local consultation. I get where the manager is coming from in relation to that reply. It is the case that as the implementers of any specific planning decision, the council just implements it. But under Section 38 of the Road Traffic Act, the council has the authority for traffic calming in any particular area. So what I would ask within these motions as well, if we pass this motion, is not only do we have local consultation for the area, but also that the transport manager or the city manager asks the law agent on what can be challenged in relation to to the decision that comes, because it's not challenging the whole decision, the bus connects decision, but just very specifically in relation to these traffic changes that are supposedly traffic calming, when really it may actually have the opposite effect in some cases. And again, to be fair to the engineers, I can see where they're coming from. I've taken those turns quite a few times myself. But I think in light of where the traffic will be going to, how it will disperse, like that ideally, we would want people not to use their cars. But in the event that they do, how do we manage it? Is it the case that we look at the specific decision that comes down and go, okay, can we only introduce at certain times? Or can we not introduce it again at all? And I get the manager's reply there saying that it does, if the decision is made, then we do have to implement. But I think that should be something as us as a council challenge in how we implement, because under, again, Section 38, we need to provide for traffic calming in the area. And if the area is actually not calmed, but actually has the opposite effect, then we need to do something about it. So, I would say, with all three motions, if we can just move to the next stage of having a local consultation, that would be great. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Hazel. Anne Feeney.
Thanks, Chair. Sorry, microphone problems here. I'd like to fully support my colleague, Councillor James Gagan, in relation to this, and other councillors I know in the area, and local election candidates that are all rightly raising this as a significant issue. The NTA never included these banned turns in the original consultation process. They are now introducing them as part of their application. Like others, I would suggest that this is usurping Dublin City Council's role and their responsibility in relation to whether turn bans are appropriate or not in areas, or whether one-way streets are appropriate or not. It is not up to the NTA to decide this. This is in the remit of Dublin City Council. And I would ask Bord Pumanola to ensure that that is upheld. This issue does not just relate to Ranelagh. This issue also includes areas like areas in Turnure and Rathgar, Ravensdale and Kimmage, Grove Park, and streets adjacent to Portobello, Crumlin Road, etc. And that's another reason why the whole bus corridor area for this, in this area, the Kimmage one, Kimmage to City Centre, and the Rathfarnham Temple Oak one should be looked at together, because the impact in terms of traffic management and the impact in terms of access for residents relates to the decision in relation to both of these corridors. I demand or request of the Assistant Chief Executive for Environment and Transport in Dublin City Council that they would flag to Bord Pumanola that they have no function in relation to these turn bans and one-way streets. And if there already has been discussions within the NTA on it, that he would report back to us in relation to his assessment of the access issues for residents and the traffic management. Also, as Councillor Gagan said, and Councillor Chu, to initiate the consultation process and relook also in relation to whether access could be provided for local residents, or whether this has to be a 24/7 thing. I mean, there are so many questions in relation to this, and it going to Bord Pumanola without consultation is completely unacceptable. Thank you.
Thanks, Anne. Danny Byrne.
Sorry, thanks, Chair. I just want to raise that this also affects the area of Portobello. The bus gate on Rathmines Road prohibiting access from there, so access to Portobello. The one-way system on Richmond Street, which is not going to be conducive to people living in Portobello. And the concentration of traffic on Harold's Cross Road and the implication for South Circular Road at Leonard's Corner. So I think if there's a further assessment, that it should include the Portobello area. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Paddy McCartan, sorry.
I'd be supporting my colleagues on this one. Chair, I think on Bord Pumanola have granted permission to two of the bus corridors so far. So until these fundamental issues are addressed, there's going to be a complete lack of clarity here, because we know what's going to happen. I've waited 5 years for the bus corridor to come through Balls Bridge, and I'll be gone by the time it eventually comes through. But some of the proposals there, when you dig deeper and you see the roads being limited access and no right-hand turns, if you examine the maps very closely, you'll see that they are part of the proposals for the corridor that's going through Balls Bridge. And, you know, there is a fundamental question here from the law agent, or somebody has to answer it. Is there, do on Bord Pumanola, do the NTA have a function in relation to turning bans and one-way streets? And there should be a public consultation initiated by Dublin City Council into this whole issue. This, I wasn't at the meeting on Friday, but it has certainly captured the imagination of people living in Ranelagh. But more importantly now, people are beginning to realise in all the other bus corridors that are seeking permission from on Bord Pumanola through the NTA, it's going to have major implications right across the city. Thanks.
Thanks, Paddy. Pat Dunn.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. In a more general way, I just want to raise what the issue and the concern that I and others have as to what level of engagement has taken place between Dublin City Council, traffic engineers and traffic section and the NTA in relation to these proposals. I, as an individual, submitted an observation to An Bord Pleanála in relation to the Tala to City Centre bus corridor project. For similar reasons, it was outlined in relation to Renle, that the impact on surrounding roads would be massive and detrimental. The NTA issued what was referred to as a response to the various observations that was made to that. I think that was issued probably about 3 weeks ago. The question is, has TAG, or whoever is responsible in Dublin City Council, responded to the NTA response? Because there would have been a similar NTA response, I would have thought, in relation to the bus corridor that affects Ranelagh and some of the other places that's discussed here. And if we haven't responded, it's shame on us. Because if I'm reading correctly the comments that is made in this report, that once approved by An Bord Pleanála, Dublin City Council will have no say whatsoever on the future of those changes. So can I have an answer to the question, have we responded to the NTA responses in relation to the bus corridor projects?
Mannix.
Yeah, look, it's no surprise for me here. I mean, I flagged these things way back when I read the report, the Bus Connection report, when Jasper came into this council chambers and gave us the kind of what, you know, was a grand performance, which should have been in the Abbey Theatre. Now the reality is what it is. You often mention yourself, Councillor Lacey, the amount of agencies that are involved in traffic in the city. I think there's about 40 of them altogether.
64.
This is wholly undemocratic and a bullying of the residents. But tonight, now we debate the Dublin City Council traffic plan, which is equally as concerning to many, many residents who are now beginning to realise what is actually happening in the city. Dublin City Council has been pushed into a situation where we're simply a mouthpiece for the NTA and the likes. You know, you can see that through, you know what I mean, the likes of Active Travel, where the NTA pays all the salaries within there. So I would like to know how many of the traffic engineers in Dublin City Council actually had any input into these situations? Or did this just come straight down from the NTA right into the traffic department, etc.? The fact that it's going to go to An Bord Pleanála without any proper input from Dublin City Council is simply outrageous. I would appeal to every single councillor here to support this particular motion, because what's happening is that the democracy is being undermined, but also the democracy on the road space is being undermined as well. And all of a sudden, we're simply just being rubber stamping situations that's going to cause mayhem. The car isn't going anywhere. It's going to be here. We know that. It's going to be electric or otherwise. But to simply turn around and tap swathes of left and right hand turns that you can't go here in order to facilitate what I believe is privatised public transport, because it would be franchised out to Go Bus. There's totally no that situation. But I think it's time now, and the time is finite because we are leaving this particular council. But it's finite now that we actually step up here to the mark, support our city, support our residents, and actually ask for accountability in this particular manner. It is not good enough. But as I say, I support the motion, and I thank you so much for putting the motion to the agenda. Thank you indeed.
Okay, thanks, Mannix. Look, I'm supporting all of three motions, irrespective of the nuanced differences between them, because I think there is an issue here that needs to be addressed. As I said at the meeting, the public meeting on Friday night, and this isn't a dig at the Minister for Transport before anybody thinks it is extraordinary that the Minister for Transport would say at the meeting on Friday night that the unaccountable National Transportation Authority is making an application to the unaccountable An Bord Pleanála to implement traffic changes in his constituency, our constituency. It is just, we have become so undemocratic. I don't think the public really understand it at all, as powers are being transferred on a daily basis to quangos and agencies that are accountable to nobody. So I think there's two issues here. There's the issue of the democratic accountability sort of issue and people having a right to have a say over their own area, and there is the immediate traffic issues. And I think Councillor Feeney's point about us writing to An Bord Pleanála, or the Deputy Chief Executive writing to An Bord Pleanála, simply saying we don't believe that An Bord Pleanála should be making those micro decisions in relation to the overall bus connects. You know, whatever about they're making decision, and I have a reservation about that, they certainly shouldn't be determining whether somebody can take a right turn off X road or Y road. I mean, that, in my view, is way beyond the remit. And if you want to see daftness in relation to traffic from An Bord Pleanála, go down to Seaford Avenue in Sandymount
and see a 6 feet wide, and I'm stretching it if I say 6 feet wide pedestrian crossing that on board Panola insisted would be put in on a road that simply nobody uses. Like, it is outside a woman's house, it is between two footpaths, it is simply daft and an extraordinary waste of money. And that's because everything is done on maps and everything done as drawings and everything is done by the D. Moore's booklets on road rules. But has anybody actually gone out and seen the implication of it? So I support the comments made by Councillor Feeney. And rather than wasting time, can I ask that we agree to three motions and that the manager would write as requested to Embore Pinola in that fashion? Okay?
Agreed, Chair.
Oh, Chair, can we also ask the manager to get clarity from the law agent? Because I think that's very important.
We can ask the manager. Let's not have a big, long debate. It's just 5-5. Just, James?
Councillor Dunn asked a very pertinent question. Could we just get the reply to that as to whether or not they're going to do a planning observation, or they did when the deadline's passed now. Yeah. I mean, I put in my own planning
Colin,
observation.
Do you know?
Did you put in one, or did the City Council?
I haven't been involved in the...
we'll try and get an answer, James.
But as far as I know, there has been consultation all along with BusConnects. I don't know to what degree that is. But.
I asked a specific question. The NTA responded to the observations. I know they did it in relation to the Tala City Centre. Have we responded to the NTA responses to On Board Clonala? That's the question. And if you can't answer it this afternoon, can you send a report to each of the councillors?
Okay, if we can get an answer to that. Okay, manager's taking a note on that. Okay, I'm going to move on quickly. I'm sorry about this. The report of the executive manager... noted, or does anybody want to raise anything? Manix.
Thank you very much for the report. It's just in relation to St. Kevin's and the ongoing dumping that's up there. It's driving the residents completely crazy. That's up at St. Kevin's Parade. You know, it really is atrocious. The other situation is what happened in the apartment blocks in York Street, the emergency situation there where hot water scalded individual tenants. Could I have a report on that, please? And like as I say, could I also ask you to deal with the issue in relation to the huge amount of graffiti that's hitting the York Street, Angel Street area, please. And that'll be really, really, really important. And also, could you address the issue of the advertisement screen on Rathmines Road, which is now causing the residents real serious problems because it's so bright, so noisy, that they can't get a sleep. Thank you, Councillor
Lacey. Thanks, Councillor Feeney. And if everybody, we could be as quick.
Yeah, very quickly, just Herzog Park. Could we have an update, please, Manager? Thank you.
James, I think your hand was up. No? Okay, Claire.
Thank you. Just note on the report that it states that we were due an update on the new plans for Portobello Harbour at the April meeting, and that hasn't happened, and I still can't get a date from the lead project manager on this as to when we might see them. Will it be next month? Or separately, I was also in an answer to a question last month. I was told we'd have a presentation this month on the new plans for the former Pocket Park at the bottom of Georgia Street and Dame Lane that was taken over by the Mercantile when they were redeveloping. Can I get an update on when we might see those plans as well? And could we also get an update on the plans for along Woodkey, behind Christchurch and beside the Woodkey offices?
Our own lands, Blind Key, in front of civic offices, or, well, to the right of civic offices.
Behind Christchurch and as if you were going to the car park, the
along
city
the lane there.
Car park, we had plans presented a while ago, but it was supposed to go out for public consultation. I'm just wondering where they're at as well. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Pat?
At our last meeting, Chair, we agreed the Dublin South East Discretionary Fund. Is that process finished now? And if so, are we going to start to see some of the projects come into operation?
Well, I know one of them in my own area has started, so they obviously are beginning to happen. Okay, Manager.
Councillor Flynn, I will talk to our public domain team in relation to the litter issues in St. Kevin's Parade. Come back to you over the next few days. I'll also, as check out the situation in relation to water issues in York Street. You've also mentioned graffiti, huge issue across the city at the moment our public realm team are dealing with, so we'll focus on the York Street area. I'll talk to you separately in relation to that advertising screen, which I believe is planning permission. Councillor Byrne, in relation to Portobello Harbour, last month Parks did promise a report in relation to where they are at. There was a brief update during the week saying that they're nearly ready to start the Part A procedure. I know we've been waiting for that for a long time, so I will continue to liaise with Parks on that. The Mercantile Pocket Park, there has been some discussions with the developer there in relation to the former small space there at the end of George Street. So I will arrange for a meeting with councillors so you can view what's envisaged there. And I'll also get an update from Parks in relation to the park there at the top of the civic office.
Okay, thanks, manager. Moving on to motion.
Chair, just to...
Oh, John, sorry. Yeah.
Just in relation to her, so we haven't had any formal response from Irish Water yet, but we're going to meet internally to see if we can get creative in relation to it.
Can I just ask that there would be some remedial work done in the car park in the meantime, if this is going to go on for a couple of years, please? Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Sorry, I'm in a rush to try and get you out in time. Motion one, I'm happy with the report. Motion two, I'm happy with the report. Motion three has been dealt with. Motion four, James Gagan. Danny?
Yeah, he just asked me to move that for him. Okay. I think it should be fairly straightforward. Thank you.
Okay. Motion five and six and seven have been taken. Motion eight, Pat Dunn, St. Agnes Convent. You happy or no?
I am, but I just want to expand on the report. For those who don't know, the 100 apartments was provided by Fold, an approved housing body for older persons' accommodation in Crumlin, just off Armagh Road, at the back of the what had been always referred to as the girls' school side of Armagh Road. Most people who moved in were delighted to move in, brand new apartments. However, problems have been occurring in terms of poor maintenance, and most of that maintenance is in the grounds of the development. Side by side with the planning permission that was granted to for the older persons' apartments was the building of a primary healthcare centre, which has gone ahead, and that's been run by the HSE, providing many, many services. And the third aspect of the planning approval was for a nursing home, and that nursing home was also to have communal facilities that could be used by the tenants that had moved into the older person's fold apartments. And I've been hearing from some of the tenants up there that there's numerous problems, and we've explored them in this motion. And I want to thank Aisling Brown from our own acquisitions and approved housing body section for her help and assistance in relation to this. And I also want to thank Martina Conroy from Fold Housing, who responded with a letter that is a page and a half long, a very positive response in relation to the maintenance issues. And I look forward to Martina and Fold being able to meet with the residents in public meetings, consultations and dealing with those. The big question remains from the reply that the derelict site section says that it has a file on the site that was for the nursing home, but it doesn't expand from that. Sorry, it does expand from that. It says that there's new owners and they're trying to establish who the new owners are and then engage with them. The question I have this afternoon is that if planning permission had been given by On Board Plan Ála with a stipulation that it was for a 5-year period, and I believe that that has expired, I just want confirmation from the derelict site section that it has expired, then what is the status? Because the reply does say that a nursing in the new owner is going to continue to try and develop a nursing home on the site. So there's a big question as to whether they have valid planning permission or not to do so, whether they would have to reapply. And this is very important because 100 tenants that moved into that complex are looking out on a derelict site, where the plans that was presented to them was a lovely garden area with some water features and seating and all the things that you would expect, and it just hasn't happened. And we're here this afternoon to make sure it does happen. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Pat. Aisling Brown is on line if you want to come in, Aisling.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Pat. Yeah, I mean, the Fold kind of were very open around the issues that had arisen there, and they've been through, unfortunately, not one but two management companies who manage the kind of communal grounds, and that service hasn't been up to standard. Now, what they've said is that the most recent appointed management company engagement has been far more positive, and they're very hopeful that all the issues that you raised, Pat, will be addressed in a timely manner. In relation to the nursing home, I actually believe, and I'll have to check this out and I'll get back to you in a report, that there's a restriction on what can be developed on that site because it's former church lands. So even if this permission has run out, the next planning permission that will have to be lodged will have to be along the lines of some type of nursing home or some type of care facilities, and that there was a restriction on the disposal there just because it was religious and church lands. So I think that was maybe the issue, and the original owner just didn't have the wherewithal or the means to develop it out. But I'll check that out for you, Pat, and I'll get back for a report for you and for the committee.
We're going to keep on moving. Thanks, Aisling, and we're going to keep on moving on. Motion number 9, James Gagan, can we just agree that? Yeah, okay, thank you. Motion 10 is dealt with. Motion 11, Hazel Chu.
Yeah, I'm happy with the report. So if, Frank, you're happy to write to Irish Water to ask them to join our next meeting. The only thing is they'll blame DCC for water work. So the relevant section or person in charge from our side as well, if they're also here, because it's not. I just don't want to be a case of Irish Water goes, well, it's DCC's fault, and DCC not being there to answer either. So if we can have both, that would be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Hazel. And look, I 100% support this motion. I've written to Irish Water, I'd say, about 20 times since Christmas, and every single response has been the same. Thank you for your query. Here's your reference number. I have about 20 reference numbers for the same road. Quite frankly, Irish Water have been a disgrace in how they've dealt with this and how they've dealt with residents. But we're going to, motion agreed, and we're going to get a seek meeting. Okay? I think I'm passing notes here. I'm not too sure. Motion 12 from Hazel Chu, Greyhound Waste in Gulliston.
Yeah, I get where the manager is coming from in relation to that it's a private waste. The problem here is that the Gulliston site is just outside the depot. So what has happened because the Greyhound, now it's not that they're not coming to collect it, but because they can't have wheelie bins, being a terrace cottage housing, they don't have wheelie bins there. So they all put their rubbish there, and then Greyhound comes to collect it. But by the time they come and collect it, it's either all scattered out, or and the lads from the depot ends up having to clean it up, or the residents end up having to clean it up. So it's actually a shared like hassle for both the depot staff and the residents at the moment. And be it that it's not a Dublin City Council provided service, but even if Dublin City Council can facilitate by writing a letter to Greyhound, that will be very helpful, because I get the feeling Greyhound just needs a kick up their bum to get something in place that will be storage or accessible, because coming into summer that issue will be much worse. Over the winter it's been a bit better, but like coming in summer last year, we saw rubbish everywhere around Gulliston and outside the depot as well. And the depot staff in Gulliston had to clean it up. So thanks.
OK, thanks, Hazel. And Barry Woods from Waste Management is here on the line. Barry?
Yeah.
Do you want to say anything?
Yeah, just thanks, Chair. Just I'll come back there on Councillor Chu's motion. Yeah, we'll write to Greyhound, and we'll ask them really to be more diligent with their waste collections. And we'll also look at we'll talk to the residents about their presentation times. You know, they're governed by certain presentation times, and we'll also talk to the residents as well in that location.
That would be great, Barry. I'm conscious this isn't yours. It's not a Dublin City Council problem. It is more that we need the council management support to push Greyhound, and if they, even apart from collection, could come up with some other idea, like a big kind of belly thing, bin thing that the residents can put in. That would be great. Thank you.
Thanks, Hazel. And again, I support you in this motion. You've made the case. I'm not going to repeat it. Okay, motion agreed. Motion 13, Daniel Ketch, and then we have Maria Kavanagh here from the Dublin Central. But Daniel, if you want to say something first.
Thanks. Thanks, Dermot. I suppose the report's fine. I was just wondering if we get like a timeline. There's a number of things that need to happen. Get a draft terms, get engagement with councillors, and so on. So could we get just an indication of the timeline? Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Daniel. Danny Byrne, then Claire Byrne. Oh, look, just go on. Come on.
Yeah, it's quite ridiculous how long this has taken. It's quite some time ago, Chair, since the previous CEO of this council agreed to finally set up a task force at the 100th probably time of asking. And here we are now, a year or two or whatever later, and we're coming to the end of this council term, and we still haven't got it. And the local people are looking at their local councillors to say, what are you doing? So it's really poor form, and we really need to get the skids under. And as Daniel quite rightly said, we need timelines for these things. So we should have this task force ready to set up by our next meeting. I don't think that's unreasonable. Thank you.
Thanks, Daniel. Claire Byrne, and then I'll bring Manix. Go ahead.
Thank you. And it's good to see some progress in this, but I support the comments about it taking so long. And just to note that I had a motion down back in February that was calling for this, but also had a range of other requests, and one of which was to have a sit down with the local councillors of the area and the housing manager to find out exactly what is going on, because the site is being built and we still don't have agreement on the 900 in social and affordable homes. So can we please have that meeting like I asked last month and the month before? Thank you.
Thanks, Manix.
Yeah, well, I support the motion, but this is absolutely outrageous. I mean, it actually is contempt at this stage of the game. I mean, the only thing that's in our way here is that the management of Dublin City Council at the highest level are thwarting us here and delaying the process. This is a very simple process that's been ongoing for quite some time, a simple committee to be set up in relation to a single site around a single issue, and Dublin City Council executive at the highest level, not just with Mr. Owen Keegan, but now with Mr. Richard Shakespeare, have no intentions of setting this situation up. But it is ridiculous that we are about to actually end this term and this simply hasn't happened. Meantime, back at the ranch, the building is going ahead. The local community are at odds as to what's happened. There's no engagement with them in any aspect whatsoever. The impacts, both in terms of traffic and build on that community, are pretty appalling. But the facts are, Councillor Lacey, this is a simple, simple situation. And all we're looking for is the input of Dublin City Council's staff into this so we can set up a proper and normal committee. Keep bearing in mind the size of the site and what's actually happening down here, and also the social housing and affordable housing that's going to take place down here. I mean, it just beggars belief. And the only thing that I can actually say is that as a deliberate act by Dublin City Council executives to halt this particular process. For whatever reason, I simply don't know. And maybe it's time that the local community themselves and with those councillors who have power, hopefully will be returned, would actually set up the committee ourselves and then invite yourselves to come along to this particular situation. But it is simply unacceptable. I mean, there beggars belief why this has been delayed like this. Thank you.
Thanks. I just want to support the motion. I don't understand why this hasn't been set up. I mean, I was a member of the Docklands Council. The Docklands Council worked well. I was a member of the Oversight Forum. The Oversight Forum worked well. There was a model given to you about 2 years ago, an outline as to the membership. There was even some suggestions as who would chair it. I really think it should be just be, you know, deliver on us. But, I mean, let's be clear in relation to the affordable housing side. That failure is with government. The government have not yet determined an affordable housing scheme. So any of you who are in parties in government, you know, try and force the government to do that. And finally, the redevelopment of that site impacts on the Pembroke area as well. And while I don't think all the Pembroke councillors should be on any, you know, oversight forum, there should be some representation from that area as well as part of us. Claire, if you could be quick.
Just say, this council does have responsibility for the social element of that, and they were a part of the planning process around this, and the condition states that they weren't supposed to build until the agreement was in place. So as councillors, like, how many times do we have to ask to be told what's going on?
Yeah, I agree. We also need funding for the higher value from the Department of Housing as well. Okay, Maria.
Thank you, members. I take on board the delays by the executive. I can guarantee that there's no motive to certainly delay the process on our part, but I have commenced looking at the terms of reference and do envisage to have something to the members within the next number of weeks. I don't know if I'll have it by the next area committee meeting, but it'll be very much soon after that. But I would be targeting to get it within...
The problem, Marie, if it's not before the next area committee meeting, there won't be in place a forum before the local elections. And then if we have to start all over again, you know, it'll be another 6 months. So we need to agree a structure and, you know, nominal membership by the next meeting, yep, if this is to happen.
Okay. I take that on board and I'll push to do that. And certainly with other forums I've been involved in, there would have been representation of a minimum of two councillors on the forum. So the proposal would be that there would be nominations within the area to attend, if that's the
route. I could safely say the local councillors would not accept two councillors. I think it has to be more than that. And because then there would be some councillor representation from Pembroke. So, you know, the only people elected will be the councillors, and they'll have just been re-elected, so bear that in mind.
I take that point, thank you. What I'll do, as part of this discussion with members, a draft terms of reference will be brought to the members in the next number of weeks, and we'll be able to agree how we can move that forward and have that group set up. There is a requirement, obviously, to have community input as well as the landowners involved in the group, so those invitations will be brought forward as well. I acknowledge the request for a meeting with the housing department in respect of the housing delivery on the site, and I will arrange that with the housing manager to progress.
Miles, do you want to add anything?
Miles Farrell, the planning department. I suppose I was asked to have a if anyone wants an update on what's happened to date in the overall area. I mean, many of you may be quite familiar with it, but just I can give a synopsis of development or of permissions to date, if anyone is interested in that.
Could you circulate that? Sure. Meeting at quarter past six?
Sure. Yeah.
Would people be happy if that was circulated?
Yeah.
Okay.
Sure.
I have no straight answer, unfortunately, but it's something that I will ensure it will happen in the next number of weeks.
Sorry, thanks, Dermot. If I could just ask if we could even just notify the primary stakeholders, the developer, the Resident Association, the Housing Action Group, that we are doing this, and ask them for their views on the terms of, you know, there will be a draft terms of reference, but even getting them engaged in this process. And I would ask, as Dermot had said, we have one council meeting left, we have 8.5 weeks or something until the next council is elected. So I would hope we could establish something or at least have a template that we can implement at our first meeting for those who are re-elected. Hopefully all of us, I suppose, we'll talk soon about that. But thanks for that.
Thanks, Daniel. And sure, you have a safe seat, I'm told, by everybody in the South East Inner City. Safe to seat around. Okay, motion number 14, Fiona Connolly.
I submitted this motion on the dog felling as an issue because I think that the presentation we were given at a local group just doesn't stack up, because you know yourself, if you are asked by a doctor about your healthy habits, you're always like, yep, I eat well and all the rest of that. And I think that asking dog owners if they pick up after their dog, they're always going to say, yep, I pick up after my dog. And that's a huge issue, and it really bothers people. It like really can ruin a day. It's dangerous and it's a health hazard. So what do residents do when there's a consistent dog felling issue? Like, who do they contact? And also, it's just disappointing that there isn't budget for more action or to do more research, because I don't think the research that was done this time last year, it doesn't stack up for me.
Thanks, Fiona. And Bernie Lillis is on the line, I think. Bernie?
Yeah, yes, you sure. Are, yeah. Thank you very much. Well, I think, in fact, I was the person that presented a report on the issue of dog fouling, which I did in order to kind of provide more statistical and scientific information as to what's happening out there. The question that was asked in this particular motion is to carry out alternative research into the impact of dog fouling on footpath users. And at this stage, I really don't think carrying out such research would add any value at the moment, because I believe that the answers you get are going to be completely negative anyway. Like, we, whatever budget we had last year for doing some bit of research, and it's not something that we do on a regular basis, but we decided last year with the issue of dog fouling that we'd get some bit of a scientific knowledge behind us. And we are, Dublin City Council, through Waste Management, are members of Leave No Trace Ireland, and they carried out the research for us. Now, research such as that is very, very expensive. And I don't think, and I have discussed this with a number of people, that carrying out such research would add any value. The research that we're going to do this year will be in relation to the northeast inner city, where there are three streets that are chosen to be part of a task force, and people are working as a group of people who are trying to come to terms with illegal dumping in that particular area. So that's where the research money will be focused this year.
Thanks, Bernie. Fiona, do you want to come back, or do you want to come back at a future stage?
Yeah, I'll have a think about that. Thanks.
Okay, thank you. Motion number 15, Councillor Connolly, rezoning of the Rathmines Post Office. And we have Michael Rossiter from Planning here as well. I'm sorry for being rushing everybody. Yeah, Fiona?
I just propose this because I understand, and I've seen in the Irish Times articles, that this rezoning has happened before to protect some of the assets of a community. So that's why I proposed it, and I see the report, but I would like to understand more that it's just not a possible thing, because I think we have to do everything within our power to save the post office in Rathmines. So if that includes making unpopular decisions that will strategically preserve our community assets, I think we need to persist with that. So I would like to understand more. Thank you.
Thanks, Fiona. Mannix and Anne.
Yeah, look, I support this motion. I'd like to second the motion. It is outrageous that such an asset would end up in a situation like this. I mean, this is a state asset. It should have been handed over to the public. Rathmines is a special area. It's a fantastic area, and it lacks amenities. There's lots of dereliction up there. There's loads of buildings that could be purposed in. We're about to build apartments on the depot up there in the Galston Depot with very little facilities for residents. We're about to build a community care centre with very little facilities for residents. The situation here is that Dublin City Council should immediately seek to purchase this particular building. Immediately, there's no messing around this whatsoever. We have the resources to be able to do it. Even Temple Bar Cultural Trust has certain monies that's available that they could buy it in terms of a cultural hub and a community hub. But the fact is that this building and the Unpost are dead set on selling this off to the highest bidder, and then you have major problems where it will lie there, it'll grow as an asset, it'll be dereliction, and you just can't that. You cannot let that happen. We need to have a motion put to the City Council that this building be CPO'd, or that the Council immediately acquire this building for the tranche what's needed, bearing in mind the growth in the population, the growth in the elderly population, and the great need in this unique part of the city for such a facility. It is an outrage that this building is going to be that. Thank you, Councillor.
Thanks. I need to rush everybody now. Hazel and then Daniel. Oh, sorry, and Hazel, come in.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Sorry, very quickly, I completely support Councillor Conlon's motion, but I also want to ask, what happened to all our motions from the last council when we all, yourselves, Chair, Councillor Connolly, myself, Councillor Moore, and a few others had suggested being in contact, that the council be in contact with various specific bodies when it comes to this. What is the update on that, and what can we as a council do more, as well as the zoning question? So I support the councillor's motion, but I also want to know what the follow-up in relation to the Rathmines Post Office from us in terms of actions from last time. Thank you.
Thanks. Quick answer before bringing Daniel in is the manager has written to all of the people mentioned in previous motions. We don't have answers back yet. Daniel Ketchin.
Thanks, Dermot. I would normally come in on a Rathmines issue, but I do have to just add, I suppose, my support to this, and I think that
the manner in which Ombudsman, and as well as the minister, and I mean the minister as an individual and the corporate minister in the department, and how they approach Ombudsman's role and mandate in terms of heritage is extremely limited. And it's, I understand why it needs to be a commercial operation, sort of an independent commercial operation, but in terms of disposing of properties and in terms of just the approach to heritage in local communities, I find it quite appalling and it's very lacking. So I'm very happy to support this motion. Thanks
Daniel Anfini.
Thanks, Chair. I too would like to support Councillor Connolly's motion. Regardless of whether the services move, which is would be very unfortunate, this iconic building, it would be crazy to lose this to the private sector. We should be looking at it in terms of an art space or community, and particularly given the Citizens Advice Centre closed in Rathmines. There's lots of good uses for this building, and it's a beautiful building, and we should hold on to it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. Look, just for my own part, I commend and support the motion. As I said at the public meeting that was held about this, in that horrible period between 2011 and 2016, when the country was on its knees, when the country was broke, when the country owed billions to foreign bankers, we didn't sell off anything. By and large, public assets were retained as public assets. Now that we're a wealthy country again, it seems to me to be daft that we sell off a public asset when we need public facilities. So I support the motion. If the rezoning makes that building have a more focused use, I'll put it that way, well, then I'm supportive of that. So I would ask that we would... Michael Rossiter is here. I don't know if Michael wants to make any comment. It's essentially a political judgment, but Michael, if you want to add anything, feel free.
The planning department certainly understands the sentiment of where this is coming from, but obviously we're bound by what's possible under the Planning and Development Act. So there's two aspects to this. I suppose if you look at the planning assessment of the site in terms of what the appropriate zoning is, and then secondly, if you look at the actual legal procedure to carry out a zoning or a variation on the site. So this was, in terms of planning assessment, this was previously raised in the development plan, which came into force in late 2022. And the assessment was that a Z4 zoning, which is what the site is zoned now, is the most appropriate zoning. And that would allow a number of other uses. And that's keeping in mind the purpose of the zoning, and that's to avoid vacancy, etc., and to make sure Rathmines stays village viable as a village centre, and there's viability and vitality on the streets there. So turn, I suppose, to the procedure then. To look at a rezoning, you need a valid planning reason. And the current view is that there is no valid planning reason to initiate a variation here. So to seek to proceed with a variation, it would certainly be legally unsound under the Planning and Development Act. So the planning department couldn't really support it on that basis, notwithstanding that obviously we do understand the background to this. Thanks, Chair.
Thanks, Michael. I think what councillors are saying, and I'm trying to paraphrase this, is that good planning terms in this instance is the need, desirability, wish to retain this particular building in full public use. It's currently a publicly owned building. The premier shareholder, the only shareholder, being the Minister for Communications. And we believe that through whatever process necessary, we should be trying to retain this in public ownership for public use. And I think good public use is good planning. And personally, whatever evolves from this motion being passed, I'm happy to vote for it and to see where that travels. Let's see where we go. I hear your professional view, but I think this is a policy, political decision being made by members of this area committee, and we'll take this as far as it can go. Agreed?
Agreed.
Thank you. And thanks, Michael, for your advice. Now, we're not dismissing your advice, just taking a different road. Okay. Motion number 16, Carolyn Moore.
Chair. Councillor Moore had to leave to go to removal, so she said she accepts the report.
Okay, thank you. Councillor 17, can we take that the same?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Motion 18, Claire, yourself, Portobello Harbour.
Yeah, thank you.
Can I just clarify in the response in the report where it says this was hotel planning drawings and should not have been installed, should that read this was not in hotel planning drawings, which is my understanding, and should not have been installed?
I'd say so.
I'm going to take it on that basis. I mean, look, I've already raised the issue of us not having the reports that we were promised, or the new plans that we were promised on the agenda today. But what I will say, and I've raised this before, is that in the absence of us, the snail pace and the delay after delay after delay that has happened with this really important project, we are left in the meantime with this hotel doing whatever it wants. It started with them like just having their own car park outside the hotel when it opened before Christmas until they got the planters put in to stop that. And now it seems that they just went ahead and made their own loading bay. Like, are we to believe that the hotel went and moved the planters themselves and painted the word set down area or loading bay themselves? Is that actually what has happened, manager? Do you know?
That appears to be the situation.
How is this allowed to happen? And like, what action is going to be taken against the hotel who just took it upon themselves to create a loading bay? I mean, the maddening part about this, there's many, many maddening parts about this project and how long it's taken. But we're just allowing the hotel to encroach on public space. And one of the key objections that came from the residents at the time, aside from the fact that we didn't need a hotel, that we needed housing, which was upheld by the planning inspector at the time and then overturned by the head of Umbor Planola, who has since stepped down. But we are where we are in terms of that. Chair, this is really important.
I understand that.
Really, really important. Before one of the key issues was deliveries and set down as part of that, right? And now they've just gone ahead and made their own. Like, what action's going to be taken? Like, is the planning enforcement file open? Are they going to take it away? And when? Like, we have to stop this. And the only way we stop it is by moving forward with the redesign of the harbour, which we are waiting a year for designs just to be tweaked, a full year since we met with the residents on this. Can we just move forward and take some very serious action against this hotel and stop them from encroaching on this public space? Thank you.
I'm really sorry to everybody. I don't want to interrupt. I don't want to be a nasty chair. I'm just conscious of time. Mannix, yeah. Danny, yeah. Yeah. And
I'd like to second the motion as well and support the motion. Okay, yeah. But the other issue is that the developer and indeed the construction company are behaving appalling here. Dublin City Council's planning department and planning enforcement department need to be proactive in these matters, but they're not proactive in these matters. I want to know, can I have a report as to when there were site visits by the planning enforcement agency, when there were site visits to this particular site by building control, all of these reports to be brought to the next meeting of Dublin City Council, so as you can see what's actually happening here. This is appalling. Unfortunately though, Councillor Lacey, this is happening all over the city. Dublin City Council is not proactive when it comes to these particular matters. It's left to local people or councillors. It is really, really appalling that we don't have officers out there on the ground enforcing the law here. And I want to know why that's the case. It's simply unacceptable. I also think this, that when you have such a development like this, that first and foremost what happens to these developments is that the amenity is built out first. That's the deal that we do, particularly when it comes to hoarding and it comes to an extra deal whereby Dublin City Council allowed that park to be commandeered as a site, like the one down at the bottom of George Street, which I understand what the situation is. But the point of the matter is that we need something back, a quick pro, and that quick pro in the UK is that these particular things are built out first and then they get on with the building. And we need that to happen here. But I think the proactive nature and the non-proactive nature that's happening here is just unacceptable.
Thanks, Andrew. My own view is the planning enforcement fine should be far higher. And secondly, that breaches of planning should count against future planning applications, is my really strong view. Danny Byrne.
Yeah, I agree with previous speakers. This is outrageous that this hotel took it upon themselves to install a loading bay. But I think the council have been lax from day one with this hotel, in that the developer of the hotel had the plaza area for free for a year or more or whatever time. So I still haven't got to the bottom of that, why they didn't pay for it. And I'd like to know as well what infringement proceedings will be taken against the hotel for doing this. Thank you.
Thanks, Danny. Sorry, Daniel Ketchin. I knew there was somebody else.
Thanks, Dermot. I'll support the comments of my colleagues, and I suppose the attention is well paid to this issue by Claire. But I mean, we have to just get, I suppose my view on this is we just have to, I suppose, try to get tough on this. Like, this is like, this sort of behaviour, it makes an absolute mockery of this whole institution. So I just want to know, what are the penalties? What are the, I suppose, the notices that can be issued? Could we just get, I suppose, yeah, as was asked for, a written report on the actions that have been taken here, what actions are open to the council? And I mean, I can't see why, if we can issue fines at this point, why wouldn't we? And what's the process to do that in this situation? Do we have to wait weeks and months to do investigations, even just to give us an understanding of the legislation, if that's an issue? So thanks.
Thanks, Daniel. Manager?
I visited the location this morning. The planter's tower at the side of the road will be moved back to create a loading bay or parking space. I spoke to Parks this morning, and they're going to put them back where they should be, and I will be pursuing the matter with planning enforcement. There is a process that planning enforcement have to go through. In relation to the Forcombe Park, we're as keen as all the councillors that progress is made in relation to this issue. We are being promised. We are promised a report for this area committee meeting. We were told during the week that they're nearly there, ready to commence the party, and hopefully that will happen by the area committee meeting next month.
Okay, thanks. Motion number 19, Claire Byrne.
Sorry, can I just very briefly on the previous one? Like, they have to get rid of the writing that they painted on the ground as well. Like, it's not enough to just move the planters. Like, they have to fix that.
Yeah.
That's
taken. Motion number 19, yourself, Claire. Camden Street, walkability and cyclability.
Yes, thank you. Just on that, so this is the residents
have come together with a range of proposals, which I have sent on to you, but it would be great if they could be considered. It's about enforcement and better signage around the 30-kilometer speed limit in the area. Apparently some streets have slow zone signs, and they want more of those if at all possible. This is to try and address the issue of speeding and rat running on Heytesbury Street and Pleasant Street. There's also illegal parking here as well. They want to improve the walkability of the area. So that is looking at where trees have been uprooted on the streets, which is a huge problem on Harrington Street and the South Circular Road, and also better street cleaning during autumn when the fruit falls from those trees. I also, just on the pedestrian crossing upgrade at Harrington Street and Camden Street, my understanding is that this will be part of Bus Connects, but if we could get clarity on that, that'd be great. And just in terms of the junction at Camden Row and Wexford Street, there has been a policy change at a national level to allow for more zebra crossings, which is hugely welcome. So I'm asking the council to revisit the possibility of putting a zebra crossing here. And I did ask last month again on the issue of the city neighbourhood traffic scheme, of which St Kevin's is part of that. They were to come back to me with an update on that, and I haven't had it yet, so I'm just putting in another request for that, because it all ties in to addressing rat running, making the whole of the St Kevin's side of South Circular Road a safer, calmer place to be. Thank you.
Thanks, Claire.
Councillor Byrne, if you would send on the documentation to me, I'll try and progress this.
Thank you, Byrne.
Okay, thanks, Manny.
I support this motion, but I mean, this issue has been going on for the 15 years that I've been in the council, and even before that. This whole area has become a drunk zone.
it simply doesn't come alive until about 10 o'clock at night time, when it literally is awash with drunks who would create huge problems. It's not just about Cannon Street, it's also about Wexford Street, Redmond Hill, Angel Street, right down into George Street. That whole stretch now is becoming an absolute nightmare in terms of rat run, in terms of graffiti, in terms of, like, you know, the fact that the footpaths are broken up, there's people lying all over the place, it's completely illegible. People are doing rat runs up and down the street. Ryan's pub on the corner there at Camden Road constantly blocked the street off with railing and barrels when they're putting up customers in there which seems to me are very, very young. When they're taking deliveries in, they completely block the street so no one can bring their children to school in the morning. It's an appalling situation that's happening up there. So I think we really do need, and Dublin City Council really does need to address the issue of what's actually happening on this street and the oversaturation of public houses and that kind of, like, you know, carry on. It's just not acceptable. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Mannix. Last motion, Danny Byrne.
Yeah, I note the report that on the scheme of letting priorities. However, in certain areas, there's maybe 2-3 generations living in one home, and then they see other people coming in from outside getting social homes, apartments or houses, and it's kind of unfair. So I think there should be a local bias towards local people, particularly in sites maybe like the Irish Glass Bottle site, where generations of families worked. Their grandfathers, their fathers, their mothers worked there, and I'd like to see locals being prioritised there and in other sites. Thank you.
Yeah, I think it is fair to say, I understand the sentiments behind the motion, but I was talking to the manager about this area. You already do declare a preference through the area system. However, I think one of the problems may be, and I'm asked the housing department maybe to look at this, Area M is a particularly big area. And maybe there should be a subdivision of Area M, because I remember somebody who said to me, you were given out to me because you only got a house in Pierce Street and you wanted one in Rings End. And that was sort of a problem. So maybe the areas need to be looked at in that respect. Okay, meeting adjourned, closed. Thanks all.